about. Okay, guys, we're ready to shoot this week's promos. Let's get the talent in here. Morning, guys.
Is it? Is it a good morning? Can we just get this over with, please?
Okay, we've got prompter, and we're rolling. In 3, 2...
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3...
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6...
B.I.G.
I'm hip, I surf the web, I text, LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my god, WTF, why the face?
Can I give you two guys a friendly piece of advice, okay? Don't ever go up to the drive-thru, okay? Always walk up to the counter. You know what? Okay, they f*** you at the drive-thru, okay? They f*** you at the drive-thru. They know you're going to be miles away before you find out you got f***ed, okay? They know you're not going to turn around and go back. So they don't care.
And now,
go Dodgers and fire beer mug.
Our feature presentation.
I love my
right?
mom.
Yeah,
that was
we
beer
love
mug's
your mom,
by the way.
Yep.
Hey, have the Dodgers clinched yet? By the way, Muggs.
You know what?
You're my go-to Dodgers guy.
I know. I know.
You should know that. The Angels have already clinched for the playoffs. How about the Dodgers?
All I know is after yesterday's loss and the Giants win. The Giants are only like 2 games back, but I don't know if they've clinched yet because I'm bad this season.
Because you're a terrible fan.
Yeah, I'm terrible. You
should be on the edge of your seat at this point.
I know, but I do know the standings. I just don't know if they've clinched officially.
Yeah, that helps me not. How are you, Lisa?
I'm good. They're great.
Good.
Thanks.
They're
for
always
asking.
Great.
Yeah.
They never age.
Yeah, I hope
That's
not.
What I love about them. Got an audio story to get us started. I was going to tell you about it, but the news report is so engrossing that I want to let them do the talking. We go to Queens, New York for this story.
Tonight, in a city that prides itself on being one big melting pot, a story that proves maybe not everyone is yet on board. A nasty neighbor plastering pornographic pictures in his front windows. Why? So the family next door can see it.
How about that?
Wow, really?
How about you're trying to... Now, I have a lot of problems with the journalism in this story because nowhere is a source given as to how they know that's why the old man is plastering his front window with porn is
right.
Because he's trying to annoy the Indians who moved in next door. There's no basis in that they've shared with us, the viewing public.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the story that they're going with, is that that's how he's trying to get them to, I guess, move? Is by plastering porn in his window?
Yeah, well, it's one way.
Interesting approach.
An immigrant family. It's happening in Queens Village. Here's Eyewitness News reporter Jim Dolan.
The photographs can be seen clearly from the public sidewalk that runs along 233rd Street. They are so vile, so intentionally pornographic, that just about anyone would be offended by their public display.
I want to know what's in those photos.
Oh, I can find you a whole bunch that would match that description. That's not that hard to find.
What's that vile? That's what I want to know. I mean, how crazy is this guy going into the world of porn? Is it just naked people doing it, or is it something far beyond that? I mean, are we into two girls, one cup territory? Where are we?
God.
Like, what's up there in the window?
Especially the father of the 4-year-old boy who lives right next door.
By the way, I love this reporter on the street. He has never been more disgusted with any human in any story he's ever covered than this old man with the porn. It's pretty,
outraged.
It's pretty great.
My son is 4. My nephews, they're like 7 and 9. They come over and they see this. This is ridiculous. This has to stop.
Sanjeev Agarwal and his family are the neighbors the pictures appear to be aimed at offending the most.
He's upset because some Indian guy moved into next door, and that's it. That's the basic thing.
My name is Jim Dolan. I'm a reporter with Channel 7. Can you tell me why you have those pictures up?
Now, you will love the old man's explanation as to why the photos are up.
Okay.
He doesn't come out and say it's because I'm trying to embarrass my neighbors. Wait till you hear what his reasoning is for why the photos are in the window.
Those are vile pictures. Why do you have them up there? Jimmy is the name his neighbors use for the person who admitted to us he put the pictures up.
I'm drying them out. They got damp last night.
Did they?
Jimmy.
How'd that happen?
Jimmy.
I'm drying them out. They got damp last night.
Now, is that better or worse than what the reporter is claiming?
I don't know.
And if you're drying them out, Jimmy, do they have to be in the front window of your house facing out toward the street?
Well, that's where the sun shines in, Bean, don't you know?
I guess so. Can't put those on a table. Got to put those in full public display, I guess.
Is that legal? It's not, right?
I can't imagine that it is. It sounds like this would be a police matter that they would come and.
Yeah,
I don't know what the laws
take it down
are
because it's in view of the public. Like
it's
you know,
in view of the public.
Magazines they cover up the front of them when you
to
go
keep
into,
them away from people under 18.
Yeah.
You would think that that the police would have some recourse here.
They've been up there for some time, haven't they?
Excuse me.
You do that to offend your neighbors? Is that what you do? Is that what you do, sir? You do that to offend your neighbors? You know, you have children next door?
Get off my porch.
When I come outside, I'm afraid of it.
Neighbors have called police, but it hasn't deterred Jimmy from putting the pictures up. The Agarwals put up a sheet on their porch so that Piyush, their four-year-old son, doesn't look over and see the photographs, but that doesn't help others in the neighborhood.
I just love it. Get off my porch.
I know. He is the get off my porch man.
That's where he came from. So anyway, that's what's going on in Queens Village, New York. That's an interesting tactic, if in fact it has anything to do with the Indian neighbors next door. Again, nowhere in that story does it tell me why they think that's what he's doing. He could just be one of these guys who, you know, super gets off on just making people see porn.
Yeah, it could be.
For all we know. Could be for the people walking down the sidewalk. We don't know. But we will definitely keep you posted there. By the way, Dave says Dodgers magic number is 9, Muggs.
Woohoo!
So he is a better Dodgers fan than you
he
are.
He is.
All right, let's talk about today's all-new Kevin and Bean show. What do you say?
Whoa! Whoa! Ho, ho! Let's not go nuts!
I don't think we're going nuts. We're just telling you about what's on the program today, including a brand new Kevin and Bean Internet Roundup we've got for you. Also, Walter O'Brien, he joins us in studio. You don't know his name, but he is, as I understand it, the fourth smartest man in the world.
Wow. That's really smart.
Thank you, Lisa. He's got an IQ of 197. Which is about double what the average person has.
Oh, my God.
So how bored is he going to be talking to me?
Well, jeez. This will be quick.
Although that's got to be what it's like for him every day. Is just imagine how impatient you would be with regular people just dealing with them on a minute-by-minute basis if you are seeing the world that much differently than we are.
Yeah, I don't think that's a blessing necessarily.
And if he's he's the fourth, what's the IQ of the world's smartest man?
Well, I don't know, but I bet he does.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
I'm sure we can ask him about that. This is a guy, by the way, who hacked into the Pentagon computers when he was 13 years old, hacked into the Bank of England when he was 16.
Holy crap.
And they've made this new television show, Scorpion, about him. He works with law enforcement to try to help them track down criminals, particularly cyber criminals. He helped find the Boston bombers after the marathon bombing there.
That's impressive.
This guy is the real deal. So Walter O'Brien on the program today. Also, our old friend Dr. Drew makes his regular Thursday appearance. Actor Dylan O'Brien from The Maze Runner. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Teen Wolf. He's going to be on the program today. And a young man named Bono, apparently in a band called U2.
Silly
That's
name for a band.
Terrible name. Isn't I don't it? Think they're going to make it. I'm going to advise him to change the name at this point. He'll join us, too. It's all coming up. Plus, Ralph's got the Showbiz Beat. That's next here on K-Rock.
Penis.
Oh, come on, Lisa. That's... out of the blue, that's inappropriate.
You're just trying to offend our Indian neighbors, Lisa.
Look, you guys get hay. I get penis.
You get penis. That's when you scream.
Yeah. You get it, all right.
Hey, it's 5:54 now, Thursday morning on the Kevin and Bean Show. Our friend Ralph Garman steps in. Time for our first look at the Showbiz Beat. What's going on?
Everybody going to the Clooney wedding? Everybody invited?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll be there.
I didn't get mine. You got yours?
Yeah. Yeah. He did. Really? That's so surprising.
I know you guys are boys.
Sure. We're all going to be there on September 28th in Venice for the big party.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be quite the party, too. Apparently, Randy Gerber, who is George Clooney's business partner, they own their own brand of tequila called Casamigos. 50 cases of tequila have been ordered for the affair.
That's Cindy Crawford's husband.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
50 cases of tequila.
That's a wedding.
Alone. Boy, it's going to be a lot of vomiting and hanging over at that affair.
Venice, Italy, right?
No, Bean. The Venice Beach.
I didn't know. A lot of people get married in Venice.
They're going to work out there at Muscle Beach, and then they're just going to hang out in one of the cafes there on the boardwalk.
Just wasn't clear.
Ugh.
Miley Cyrus compares herself to Elvis. She's a lot like Elvis, she says, about herself to everyone else.
What she could mean by that.
No one wants to admit that Elvis was twerking, but he was, she says.
No, he wasn't. He never twerked. He never bent over and put his ass up in the air and shook it during Hound Dog, all right? White trash, sit down.
Yeah.
John Travolta wants everyone to know those rumors about him hitting for the same team are just that. All right, John. He tells the UK paper that the rumors regarding his sexuality are simply about people wanting money. That he's learned to ignore the tabloid stories because he has no control over it. And so he doesn't even try to deny the rumors about him being gay any longer. Because he's gay!
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I kid.
And by the way,
I kid, John,
again,
I love.
For the record, no one cares whether he's gay or not.
No.
Right?
No. It matters not. Not one
it matters not at all. So if he is, then why is he putting up this fortress of solitude around him? It's not like he's not going to get work.
Yeah.
Is it too?
I think
because
it's awkward with the
wife
and the kids and stuff and everything. It's just awkward. Just awkward. That's all.
And Mayim Bialik, you know her from Big Bang Theory. Let's not forget she was also Blossom. Okay, let's never put that behind us. She had a new blog entry this week called "Why My Children and I Hate the Movie Frozen." She is anti-Frozen, which is tantamount to treason in my house. She
says,
"You
might as well poop on the flag at this point if that's your policy."
She says, "Princess or Anna, Queen Anna, is on the hunt for a man." Well, I guess that's the Princess Anna is the sister of Queen Elsa.
But okay,
she's on the hunt for a man, so that's no good. The hero turns out to be a scheming villain, and the female characters look like Barbie dolls with tiny waists and ample busts and huge heads. First of all, they do have huge heads, but I have considered for a long time that they need much bigger boobs in that movie. So it's just not the case at all. Look, this has been the knock against Disney and these kind of animated films for a long, long, long time, is that the princesses are always fixated on boyfriends and getting a man and the prince, and they don't... they're not self-actualized. Just stop it. Stop.
It's a fairy tale.
They're just princesses in a fairy tale. It's just a little cartoon movie for little girls. Everyone relax. I don't think it's going to ruin anyone's life if Ariel wants to leave the ocean. Okay? It's all right. Everyone.
Shh, 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 shh. Sit down. Sit down, everyone.
My new catchphrase. Sit down, everyone. And lastly, the legendary customized motorcycle that Peter Fonda rode in the iconic 1969 film Easy Rider is up for auction. This is a badass bike. I don't know if you've ever seen the film Easy Rider,
yeah.
But it's called the Captain America Harley Davidson Chopper, and it's painted red, white, and blue. It's being auctioned off on October 18th by the legendary California Auction House Profiles in History. Expected to bring more than $1 million for some lucky bike collector. It is perhaps the most iconic motorcycle in movie history.
Where's it been for the last 50 years?
I don't know. I guess a private owner must have had it. I can only imagine. Oh, here we go. Here's some more details for your story, Bean. The guy who's selling it, Michael Eisenberg, is a California businessman who once owned a themed restaurant with Peter Fonda and Dennis Hopper, by the way. Hmm. He bought the bike last year after being displayed for 12 years at the National Motorcycle Museum in Anamosa, Iowa.
Where many, many people, I'm sure, got
I
to see
I guarantee you, Bean was planning a trip to Anamosa, Iowa to see the National Motorcycle Museum, but just ran out of time. Mm-hmm. Too busy getting haircuts around the country. Today's celebrity birthdays. Fred Willard is 81 years old today. Actress Aisha Tyler is 44. Jada Pinkett Smith turns 43 years old today. And Jason Sudeikis, he's 39. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show on the world-famous KROQ at 106.7 KROQ. Thanks for tuning in. Walter O'Brien on the program today. He's the man that they have based the new CBS drama Scorpion about. One of the smartest people in the world and a fascinating life this guy has led. Will, he'll be joining us later on today. Dr. Drew on the program today, actor Dylan O'Brien, and Bono from U2 in the 7 o'clock hour. It's all coming up. Lisa, I have to confess, I have been wrong all these years with the way I've thought about Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, really?
Rush Limbaugh, I apologize. You are the most nonpartisan, unconfrontational, middle-of-the-road broadcaster I have ever heard, and I was wrong about you.
Really?
And the reason I've changed my mind is because I heard Sean Hannity on the radio this week. And compared to Sean Hannity, seriously, Rush Limbaugh is Gandhi.
Just he's a Mother level-minded.
All he wants is love and peace compared to Sean Hannity.
Oh,
I never, ever hear Sean Hannity, but I was going through my AM presets 2 days ago in the car, mm-hmm. and he happened to be on talking about the Adrian Peterson story. Now, Adrian Peterson is the Minnesota Viking who has been suspended indefinitely from the league right now because of allegations of child abuse. He whipped his kid with a tree branch.
Yeah.
And the photos that are anywhere from 5 to 7 days old, depending on the source, the injuries were horrific. They were all over his backside, his scrotum. He had defensive marks on his hand. It was more than just spanking.
It's
it was
like
child abuse.
It's a whipping.
It's a whipping, right,
yeah.
Exactly. It's 12 years a slave territory.
Right.
So what can Sean Hannity – how can Sean Hannity defend Adrian Peterson for something like that? Let's go to the tape, shall we?
This is my problem with liberals, because here's where my fear goes with all of this. You guys want to tell parents what they can and cannot do. For example, is it going to become illegal if a parent teaches the politically correct view that being gay is not normal?
Yep.
Or if a parent says that, you know, whatever the parent wants to teach a kid that you would disagree with.
Right. Sean, right.
Wait a minute. This is an important question.
Yeah.
Because I think we've gotten to the point where, right. you know, if we don't politically correct our kids, we might as well just hand our kids over to the government the day they're born, let them raise them.
Sure. Right. That makes a lot of sense, Sean. So you prosecute Adrian Peterson on child abuse charges. That means that could lead to children accessing birth control in schools and having abortions.
What?
Says Sean Hannity.
What?
I don't know what the hell is going on. We were unable to get Mr. Hannity, but we do have Cliff Madison on the line. He is from an organization called CAKE. C-A-K-E. He is supporting Mr. Hannity and maybe can shed some light on this way of thinking. Hello there, Mr. Madison. Welcome, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
First off, I apologize. I'm unfamiliar with your organization, CAKE. What does that stand for?
CAKE stands for Citizens Against Kids Emptiness. We're all about filling children up with the right moral compass to navigate a difficult world.
Okay.
Okay. Look,
plus,
we all
love cake. We love some cake.
Well, there's who doesn't love cake, right? That we could at least I know we can agree on that much, sir. Look, how can anyone look at the photos of Adrian Peterson's little boy and say that's acceptable and that shouldn't be prosecuted?
Well, first of all, we're not saying it's not a horrible thing. Obviously, Mr. Peterson overstepped his parental obligation to discipline his child, and we would ask all parents everywhere to use. To use some restraint when whipping your children. Don't whip them that bad. That's what we're saying.
No,
you know, whip them a little bit, but don't whip them a lot as well.
No, you don't whip them. You don't whip them. No. Why not? Why not a no whipping policy?
Well, if you start making policies and passing laws, sir, then you will take away a parent's ability to teach a child important lessons. How can I teach my child the important lesson of how love and marriage should be between a man and a woman if I don't beat him with a tree branch? How will he learn about love if I don't beat him?
I don't know. A lot of people seem to have managed to learn those things without getting whipped.
Well, it sounds like you could have used a little bit more of a whipping when you were a little girl, young lady, with your sassy
I don't know
mouth.
What you're
I don't like your sassy
what did
mouth.
I say?
Hey, you keep the sassy mouth to yourself, young lady, because I will. I'm not about. I'll put you over my knee right now. I don't know who you are. I'll take care of you right now.
Is that how you take care of everything?
Well, maybe you and your wife and your lesbian relationship, you don't have the proper sort of discipline that you need, but I think I could give it to you because that's what we're here all about here at CAKE, is to take children and to teach them important values through just beating the snot out of them, just giving them just a good snot bubbler once in a while on the back of the head, and next thing you know, they won't be interested in birth control or having them their abortions.
Cliff, I understand, and as our producer Dave lined you up to talk to us, that you support Sean Hannity's views on this
God
issue.
God bless Sean Hannity. Who else would be speaking the truth out there if it was not for Sean Hannity and his miracle network?
So he says if you prosecute Adrian Peterson, then now the government is going to come into parents' homes and tell them that they can no longer teach kids that being gay is not normal.
Exactly. He is absolutely right. If you start passing laws saying you can't beat your child with a branch, then the next law is going to be you can't teach your kid that gay, no way, Jose.
Okay, that's a catchy expression.
Thank
but you understand
you. That's
that
one of the T-shirts we sell here at Cake.
You understand that being gay is not as common as being heterosexual, but it is also normal, just like having being left-handed or having blue eyes. Not as common, still normal. You get that, right?
Well, I'll have you know, I also beat the left-handed and blue-eyedness out of my child the other way.
I am not surprised.
I have a kid now who's right-handed with brown eyes.
I don't know how you beat the color out of a kid's eyes. So that's impressive.
Oh, well, you have no idea.
I can't argue with your success then.
No, you cannot.
Hey, producer David King of Mexico.
That's me.
Tell me about this new Internet Roundup theme that debuted last week while I was on vacation.
Our man Omar Khan took a stab at it, and I think you'll enjoy it.
All right, hit it, Steve.
Yo, K-Rock listeners around the world, it is time for the Internet Roundup, so tell all the boys and girls, we've got funny and sexy, even music too. We've got all the greatest videos, and they're mostly on YouTube.
The Internet Roundup is a feature that we do for you every week here on the Kevin and Bean Show, where we take the best viral videos from across the Internet from all corners of the world, and we put them in one handy location at kevinandbean.com or krock.com. We got a good batch for you today, including your favorite player on your favorite team, Blake Griffin of the Los Angeles Clippers. What's he advertising here? Is this for a new,
TV,
right?
Vizio, yeah. But he's calling it Slam Dunk Poetry.
Slam Dunk Poetry has Blake Griffin standing on stage delivering a monologue to his own bobblehead. It's pretty far out. Listen up.
You're answering yes to everything I say. Head constantly bobbing, like a ship lost at sea. You kinda, sorta, don't look like me.
And it goes on like that, and it never makes any more sense than that.
Yeah, he did two other videos about his mouth guard and tearaway pants. And the best thing is, he did this at the Laugh Factory, an open mic night.
Really?
He went up. Yeah, he went up and performed these poetry reads or
that's
whatever.
That's
you call them.
Strange.
Awesome. Because it looks like it's done, you know, on a set with an audience, but he's there in an actual comedy club doing it. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Definitely check it out. Festival Supreme is coming up at the end of October. Our friends in Tenacious D, Jack Black and Kyle Gass, did an awesome ad that will remind you of the great Cal Worthington and the ads that he used to put up on TV all the time. Jack is walking around in a suit, and he's got Kyle dressed up as a tiger, I think, and they come across some of the people that are going to be on their Festival Supreme.
Look at all this comedy. At these prices, we're practically giving the tickets away.
We're not actually giving tickets away.
It's a figure of speech. You got Kumail Nanjiani now 75% off.
Why the f*** am I 75% off? I actually showed up. None of these f***ers showed up. They just sent headshots. I could. You're 75% off. How does that feel? Don't.
Come on.
No. No touching.
Okay.
And by the way, Jack Black's young son makes an appearance in this commercial. So if you ever wanted to see him flip off his father, you might want to check out the video. It's very funny. Bryan Cranston is doing promos for Major League Baseball postseason, which is going to be on partly on TBS. He does a one-man show, and he's just such a great actor, this guy. You can't take your eyes off of him when he's doing stuff like this. He's so funny and so good. And he's doing a one-man show where at one point he throws a baseball into a small crowd that's gathered and hits a woman in the head. He talks about it here.
Any actor who tells you that he's not inspired by Bugs Bunny is a liar. Frankly, or just a hack. The crowd. They felt it. Yes! You know what I think she was thinking when she walked out with the paramedics? I saw a baseball game.
It's very funny. Bryan is a national treasure. Here's one, a viral video that a family put up on YouTube. A guy and his young son are arranging a surprise for, it looks like, mom and daughter who are walking in the front door. And they just assault them as they come in with something called the TP-6000. Now, this is a toilet paper gun. And how much paper does this thing shoot, Dave? It's insane. They become
like one,
instant mummies.
Yeah, it looks like one roll, a one complete roll, but it's a cannon. So it fires it off and just keeps going. So it's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. Listen up.
Here they come. Don't fire until you see the whites of their eyes. Fire!
God.
You are going to want to set up your own toilet paper cannon once you see this. It's awesome. Speaking of little family videos, this one's called the Peekaboo Surprise. Like so many other fathers, he's got his little daughter sitting on his lap, and he has a towel on his head. He keeps pulling it away, and peekaboo, peekaboo, and the little girl's laughing, laughing, laughing. Well, then he steps out of the room for a second, shaves off his enormous beard, comes back, and plays peekaboo again. The little girl, I guess, doesn't recognize her dad or is terrified because she's never seen him without a beard, but she melts down.
Peekaboo! Peekaboo! Oh! Come here, sweetie. Oh, come here. Oh. It's okay.
That must be very disorienting if all of a sudden you don't recognize your own father,
and
right?
I'm sure they knew that. I mean, you just know intuitively that's going to happen.
Yeah, which is why they were filming.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, she was terrified.
But I'm sure, by the way, for all the nasty commenters on that video about how this is child abuse, the kid's going to be fine in like 2 minutes,
yeah.
Right? you do get over it. Our old friend, is it Flula?
Flula, yeah.
He does a series of videos where he always pretends to not understand what's going on in the world. He's actually very funny. But this one he brings up, I think, a pretty good point because I don't know if you've noticed or not, but Oktoberfest seems to be in September, and he wrote a song about it.
A mouse trap is a trapping of mouses, and a house cat is a cat in your house. A wife swap is a swapping of spouses, but Oktoberfest. It's in September, Oktoberfest.
In September.
This is what you must remember.
It is actually confusing that Oktoberfest is in September.
Why
but
is it in September?
Well, his explanation is his Septemberfest sounds stupid. So I don't know. That doesn't make it much sense to me. But here's a great video. Now, is this 99 Red Balloons when Dave, is this in a series of videos where they are challenged to do songs like this?
I guess this guy,
is that your understanding?
He gets challenged on how to do like all these different types of songs, and they asked him to do 99 Left Balloons with Red Balloons, you know?
So every sound that you hear in this video is him multi-tracking. Basically, he's got one little balloon that he's using to play the bass, then he's got another, you know, another one that he's using to, you know, to play the vocal. I mean, and then he edits them all together. So every sound that you hear is one guy playing with a red balloon, and it ends up sounding pretty darned awesome. Instruments at all. That's all played with actual red balloons. It's a fascinating video to watch. Key of Awesome is back. They have been doing movie and song parodies for years. Their latest one is Taylor Swift's Shake It Off, and I sense that they don't care for her much.
I'm such a doofus, acting like I'm clueless, but I can be ruthless. If you break my heart, you'll end up in a song.
I got to give it up for them. They always make their parody sound just like the real song. I mean, they do a really, really good job.
Yep.
But leave my Taylor alone. And finally, for this week's Kevin and Bean Internet Roundup, Lie Witness News is back. This is our friend Jimmy Kimmel. This time, he took his cameras onto the streets of New York for Fashion Week 2014 and asked these people questions about designers that, of course, they just made up. Like, for instance, have you seen the latest collection from that character on Friends? Listen up.
Chandler Bing, have you heard?
Chandler Bing, I have heard of.
Yeah.
You know what I do follow.
Yeah.
It is all about social media as well, and so I really follow the brand as well.
What about Betsy Ross? Have you heard of Betsy Ross?
Yes, I love it.
Love yeah. Betsy Ross?
Yeah, yeah.
The bright colors, primary colors?
Yes.
You don't think it's too much, the stars with the stripes?
For me, never is enough. So.
It's never enough.
See, Muggs, you don't get that, but Betsy Ross sewed the American flag, so she clearly isn't alive to be presenting at Fashion Week in New York right now. That's the joke there. You can see all these videos at KROQ.com or KevinandBean.com. It's a brand new Kevin and Bean Internet Roundup.
Those videos were awesome. Now, baby, go watch the Internet Roundup. Yeah!
Thank you, Lisa. Hey, Bono from U2.
Yeah,
1 hour
what?
From right now here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
What?
I know,
that's
right?
Cool.
Best. Too big for our show. No question about that. Rob is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat on a Thursday morning. What's going on?
Maybe you can ask him if he has ever met or knows Taylor Swift. Maybe you can somehow turn that interview into Taylor Swift.
That's a great idea. I will. Why do you suggest that, Ralph?
Because it was just creepy yesterday when you were talking to Hannah Simone from New Girl, and you're like, did you stay friends with Taylor Swift after she was on your show? And she's like, well, we never really were friends. She did the show. She was on. I don't understand all the negative things about Taylor Swift. Do you? Hannah Simone from New Girl is not related to Taylor Swift. It somehow just became a Taylor Swift interview.
Creepy alert. I will take your suggestion and we'll find out what Bono's favorite Taylor Swift song is. How about that? It's a good use of his time.
Leave my Taylor alone. You are the creepiest dude.
Because I love. Is that the problem? Look, if I love too much, then I guess you're just going to have to deal.
Well, if you want to love Tadoff Switler, succubus, spawn of Satan.
How dare
that's you. That's on you. But I'm happy to hear that yesterday, United States Federal District Court Judge Cormac J. Carney, a true American, denied Taylor Swift's motion to dismiss the famous Lucky 13 case.
USA! USA!
And so it begins. You may remember that Taylor Swift stole Lucky 13 as her cute little merchandising game that she was playing with American greetings cards and T-shirts and stickers. Oh, Lucky 13. Oh, it's my favorite number. Oh, I'm Lucky 13. Buy your Lucky 13 things for me. What she failed to acknowledge was that there already exists a company called Lucky 13 that turns out all kinds of Lucky 13 apparel and merchandise.
I'm a little bit surprised there wasn't somebody on her team that might have done a little research on that.
Yeah, there is someone on her team. It's called Satan. And Satan doesn't want people to be happy or play by the rules. So they sued her ass. And she went to the judge and said, oh, dismiss it because I'm Taylor Swift. He said, no! This thing will go to trial, and if proven guilty, you shall die.
Guilty!
Are you sure death penalties on the table for
this? Oh, yeah.
For copyright infringement?
Oh, yeah.
Not even Guantanamo? Actually, right to death?
And right there in the courtroom. With a battle axe.
American justice is getting rough.
Well, they have to when people like this, scofflaws like Taylor Swift, are out and about. So, the case will go forward. The judge said, I'm sorry, Ms. Swift can't shake this off. Speaking of people who just want to be offended, this Talina Evans, 25-year-old Talina Evans, who is on the verge of suing Mattel because of Barbie, is just, she's on my last nerve.
What's this story?
She claims she bought a talking Barbie doll for her 7-year-old daughter. But when she got it home, the doll just spoke in horrible expletives and just cursed at her 7-year-old.
What?
Yes, Lisa. She says, if you take Barbie home, she just says, what the F to your daughter all the time. So she tried to take it back to the store, but the store wouldn't take it because she didn't have a receipt. So now she's going to sue Mattel for the foul-mouthed Barbie that her daughter owns. Here's the thing. She says the doll says, what the F? Mattel says, Barbie's saying, off the hook. She's hip Barbie. She's like, oh my God, that's off the hook. It's not what the F, it's off the hook. Here, I brought in the audio. You be the judge.
Good,
okay?
Good. It's clearly off the
hook. Clearly.
There's no way you could hear that and think it says what the F.
Unless you want to be offended.
Unless you want to be offended.
And you want to sue Mattel.
Taylor Swift is coming out with a new line of dolls that she's calling Barbie, by the way.
Is she really?
That's great. She's decided that it's going to be very popular.
That's terrific. Hope no lawsuits happen because of that. And I've decided that Yildiz is my favorite band in the world. You're going to have to break that to Bono when you talk to him next hour.
He's lost you.
Yeah. Yildiz. I'm all about the Yildiz. Of course, famously, they had their breakout hit, What Does the Fox Say, last year. Well, I thought that was the ultimate. But it turns out it was just the pentultimate because their new music video, Trucker's Hitch, is even better. It's an entire song about their struggle to learn how to tie the trucker's hitch knot. The whole song is about knot tying, and it is catchy as hell, and also supports my belief that almost anyone can write a popular country western song. The YouTube video, which got posted yesterday, I believe, has nearly 700,000 views as of this morning.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's a pretty catchy song. Here is Yulvis' new hit, Trucker's Hitch.
It's so hard, the greatest knot of all. So flexible and strong, but I do something wrong. I know the bowline sheep shank and the double overhand, but the trucker's hitch I just don't understand. Let's do the trucker's hitch.
Yeah! Let's do the trucker's hitch.
They can write a song about anything, those guys.
They can.
That's awesome.
So good. Today's celebrity birthdays. Fred Willard's 81 years old today. Aisha Tyler turns 44. Jada Pinkett Smith, soon to be seen in the brand new Gotham on Fox. She is 43. And Jason Sudeikis, funny man from SNL and other things, 39 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thanks a lot for tuning into the Kevin and Bean Show here on a Thursday. Bono from the U2 joins us this hour on the program. Walter O'Brien, the man on whom the TV show Scorpion is based. He's the fourth smartest guy in the world, Ralph. Did you hear that?
I did hear that. I feel bad
I think
Muggs
for him. Muggs is fifth or sixth, but this guy is even smarter than Muggs, if you can believe
it. It must be so frustrating to be so close and yet so far. So from being the smartest man in the world.
Also, Dr. Drew Pinsky on the program today.
He's
and
three,
actor
right? He's third.
Dylan O'Brien from The Maze Runner
and
will join us as well.
He's the second smartest man in the world.
We have quite the brain trust going on here today for all those people.
Yep.
We talked last hour about Sean Hannity. I don't know if you heard that or not, Ralph.
I did
but,
not. I don't listen
Sean to Hannity says, look, if you start criticizing Adrian Peterson for whipping his son to within an inch of his life, the next thing you know, the government will be in your home telling you that you can't tell your kids that gays are bad.
Yes, those are directly related. I can see your point.
So that's one view on the Adrian Peterson case. But among saner folks, it has kind of reignited a debate that has been going on in this country for generations, and that is corporal punishment. And that is, do you spank your kids or not? Should you spank your kids? Are there times when it's okay to spank your kids? Can you spank your kids a little bit? Does it do any good when you spank your kids? And there is data on the topic. First opinions. In 2012, according to a CNN national survey, more than half of the women and three quarters of the men in the United States said they believe that a child sometimes needs a good hard spanking. However, scientists say exposing children to harsh corporal punishment may have detrimental effects on the trajectories of brain development. They say that it actually has, there's a significant correlation between the amount of gray matter in the brain regions and the children's performance on an IQ test. The more they are spanked, the dumber they are.
That makes sense.
I did read something the other day, a study that said that there were several IQ points difference in general between kids who were spanked and kids who weren't.
I think Bean just said that.
Yeah. But I said it better.
I was curious, Ralph, because you're a guy who has a child who is of the age that a lot of people will spank their kid.
Yeah,
because...
same age as Adrian Peterson's kid, by the way.
Oh, really?
4 years old, yeah.
Oh,
4 years old.
Gosh.
Okay. So you – I don't know whether you go through this or not, or if you have a strict policy, or if it's on an as-needed basis, or what are your thoughts of this? I'm sure as a new parent, I'm sure you've wondered – you've had a lot of questions about what the appropriate way is to discipline a child.
We are non-spanking household. We are not into physical punishment at all with our child.
And so what do you do instead that you think is more effective?
We talk to our kid.
I is know it timeouts?
That sounds glib and euphemistic, but it's not. If you start at the very young age of dealing with children with respect and with love, then they take very seriously when you are disappointed or upset with them. If you condition them to believe that the best possible scenario for them to live in, their world is, mommy and daddy love me and are proud of me and are happy with my behavior, that when you acknowledge that you are unhappy with their behavior, when you're frustrated with them, and you teach them to not only express their own feelings but to hear the feelings of others, they take it very seriously and it's very easy to get their attention in those situations. You'd be surprised how much they can comprehend, even though they can't always verbalize it, how much they can understand the sort of unwritten social contract between behaving properly and not behaving properly. And look, they can't always control themselves, and sometimes they act out. But when you – it's not hard to get their attention. They're 4 years old, for God's sakes, you know? And we always felt that they're so small and fragile, and to use your physical superiority over them is sort of barbaric and in essence teaches the wrong lesson, I think, which is that physical violence in some way is an acceptable way to express your frustration with someone, your unhappiness with someone, the fact that you're disagreeing or you're unhappy with their behavior, that somehow if you feel that way, it's okay to raise your hand and strike another person. And that's not a lesson we ever wanted to impart to our daughter.
Lisa, you want to try to say that better than Ralph just did?
No, I know.
Are you cool? Are you happy with
his explanation? I think I'm
good with that. I agree. Look, I don't have a kid. I'm not in the exact situation. But that would be my policy also. I completely agree with you, Ralph. But for thousands of years, millions of people have done it the other way.
Yes.
I bet you and I both grew up getting paddled.
I did.
I can count on one hand the number of times my parents ever struck me. It was like maybe three times lifetime.
Wow, that's a surprise from that generation.
Yeah, they also did not believe in it to a large extent. You'd get threatened sometimes, you know, don't make me get the belt, you know, that sort of thing. But largely, I was also raised in an atmosphere of I was much more concerned and frightened of disappointing my parents or upsetting my parents than I was about getting beaten, because I was conditioned to seek out their love and approval in the sense of behaving properly. My reward was them being proud of me, you know.
But back then and today, you're still largely a constant disappointment, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yes. I think they wish they had beaten me more in retrospect, but they just didn't have the chance. Look, I understand. I understand people have done it for thousands of years, and that had been the standard for a long time in terms of parenting. But doesn't almost everything change and evolve in terms of society, you know? If you want to beat your kids, why aren't you – then watch black and white television or, you know,
get
a Victrola to listen your music on. I mean, we grow and we learn as a society, and you start to do things better, you hope, right?
Now, I want to take some calls on this, and the phones are already ringing because I know people have some very strong opinions on whether it's ever okay to slap your child at 1-800-520-1067. What's your policy on this? And it's easy to use words like if you want to beat your children, because that does have a connotation. But I think a lot of people who are using it as a discipline would not consider it child abuse, would not consider that they're beating their child.
Like a little swat on the behind?
A swat on the behind would be something that I can understand that a parent would say, no, I'm not even trying to hurt them. I'm basically just trying to wake them up to how inappropriate their behavior is and to get their attention and to let them know how serious it is, which is very different from, for instance, what Adrian Peterson did to his kid, which I think all of us agree is well over the line.
Absolutely. However, I firmly believe, and again, this is just my own personal, you know, it's hard to tell other kids how to raise other parents how to raise their kids. I mean, that's very difficult. But my belief is, whether it is a swat on the butt or a severe beating, the mere act of physical contact in that sense, if it's directed out of anger, out of frustration, if the mere act of physical contact in that situation is sending a message that somehow that's an okay resolution for those feelings or an okay expression of those feelings. And I think that's a slippery slope. I think it can really make a bad impression on a kid and something that would be long lasting and detrimental.
So do you think those other parents that are doing it the other way are wrong?
No, I don't. Again, I'm not in a position to tell other people how to raise their kids. Look, I get it. I understand the frustration sometimes. I'm also lucky. My kid's personality is that she is very sort of easygoing and well-behaved and eager to please. I understand other kids can be holy terrors. I've seen that. And I can understand the situation that may raise if a kid's putting himself in danger or others in danger. Maybe you have to take drastic measures. I can't judge other people's situation. I just firmly believe that it's better to not than to do it.
And it's working for you, too.
And it is working for me. Yeah,
it's good.
Look, it's worked for other people, too. I mean, corporal punishment has also worked for people. There's been some great people who have turned out who have been slapped around as kids. So you can't say one is definitive over the other. I just think in sort of a broad stroke, there's obviously one is better than the other in terms of just the well-being, the mental well-being of a child.
By the way, in 19 states in 2014, it is still legal for schools to paddle children. I grew up in an era where kids got spanked in front of the class as well, by the way, not just at home by their parents, but by their teachers and by their coaches, too.
Yeah, I know. And I think public shaming also is, but it's really detrimental and dangerous to do to kids. I mean,
all right. Well, we got some great calls on the line. 1-800-520-1067. Let's take one just real quick before the break, and then we'll get to the rest. Connie is going to be up first. She's in Anaheim, and she's a mom. Hey, Connie, thanks for calling the Kevin and Bean Show. What's going on?
Hi, guys.
Hi, Connie.
I just wanted to let you know that I have two kids. One's 20, one's 14.
Mm-hmm.
And my 20-year-old, when she was little, like Ralph says, holy terror. And she got spanked, and she turned out perfectly fine.
Can you come back to the phone, please, Connie? Come back to the phone.
She turned out fine?
Yeah, she's fine. She's a really great kid, and she was tested for intellectual, I guess, ability when she was in third grade, and super smart kid. She's in she's a biochemistry major right now. That's
okay, great. But it's worth mentioning that you have no idea how she would have turned out if you hadn't spanked her.
Well, my son, I didn't spank.
Because you love him more, right?
No.
Yeah, okay, we understand.
But he also got tested and everything, but he didn't fare so well, and he's had trouble in school. And
start beating him.
You need to start hitting him. Yeah. Clearly, that's what's missing here.
A lot of years to catch up on.
I just think that it worked for some kids and not the others.
So, yeah. Connie, real quick, because we're almost out of time. Why did you make the change in your parenting style between kid one and kid two?
Because kid one has an extremely tough attitude. She's just a rough kid. She's very hard-headed. She's very opinionated. While my son, he just, like, super sweet. He just says okay to everything.
He was easier, so you felt like you could control him, you could discipline him without going to that next step.
Right. With him, it's like, you can't play video games, and he's compliant with whatever I tell him.
Right.
With my daughter, you can't play video games. I don't care. Who cares? Take everything away.
Maybe your daughter told him how much you used to beat the snot out of her, so he's scared to death of you.
She does. And she actually does say, Mom loves you more than me.
Yeah, well, it's obvious that you do.
Well, I think she's got a lot of evidence to the case, too. Yeah. All right, Connie, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for calling. 1-800-520-1067. What say you? We'll take your calls next on K-Rock. Thank you, Lisa. The leading researcher on spanking in the United States is an associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin. She's been studying corporal punishment for 15 years. Here's her quote. There's no study that I've ever done that's found a positive consequence of spanking. Most of us will stop what we're doing if somebody hits us, but that doesn't mean we've learned why somebody hit us or what we should be doing instead, which is the real motive behind discipline. That's what she says.
Okay.
We're taking your calls on spanking, yay or nay, for kids at 1-800-520-1067. It's kind of back in the national dialogue as a result of the Adrian Peterson case. Ralph is here. He says no, he does not spank his daughter at all. It's not necessary. There are better ways to discipline. Let's see what James has to say. He's in Cyprus, and he's on line 5 to get us going. Hi, James. Thanks for calling, man.
Hey, good morning, guys. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
Hey, James.
Hey, listen, I completely disagree with Ralph. I mean, I think him and his parents are just a bunch of smelly hippies. I think there's a huge difference between actually beating your kid and just spanking them for discipline. I mean, my dad used to, you know, hit me when I did something wrong. And every time since then that I've even thought about doing something wrong, I would think, oh, man, if my dad found out, he'd hit me again, you know. So I would stop from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was spanked as a kid, and my dad was a little, he had a temper, and I turned out fine. A lot of people say, well, our kids turned out fine, but I remember being terrified of him and not feeling safe. And I don't think that's how you want your kids to grow up.
Well, I wouldn't say that I was terrified of my dad, but I mean, I would definitely second guess anything that I would think would be wrong, you know, and I don't beat my daughter, but I do spank, you know, if she doesn't listen the first couple of times, then I definitely give her a little spank, and it's not like I'm using my full force. It's just, you know, a light spanking, so mm-hmm. let her know, hey, you know, don't do that.
And it's certainly easier than having to really deal with her, James.
Well, it's not that I don't want to deal with her. It's just that she doesn't, you know, she's a little hard-headed like me, and
But what
about
listen,
what about you? You heard what we were talking about in the last segment. What about what Ralph says is that maybe there are other ways to express that same disappointment that you have with her without actually hitting her. Have you tried that?
Well, maybe not to the extent that Ralph has, but I think honestly, I think she's a little too young to kind of get that I'm disappointed in what she's doing. She is 4, the same age as Ralph's daughter.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
Well, you should think about it. You should definitely give this some thought. I wouldn't just do it just because it's the way you were raised and you turned out fine. I mean, doctors used to smoke in the operating room during surgery. I mean, we learn a lot of things as
now,
we go through life.
That was right.
Here.
They should have kept doing that. That was awesome.
But we appreciate the call, James. Thanks so much. All right, let's try Kelly. She's up next. She's on line 7. Kelly joins us from Granada Hills, where I think it hit 140 degrees this week,
woo-hoo!
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. I think it's maybe the hottest place in America. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
What's going on?
When I was spanked by my father growing up, but not my mother. And as an adult, I'm totally fine. You know, I'm a working citizen and everything else, but I have insecurities with male authorities. Like, I'm afraid to do something wrong that my male boss would approve of.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm even still afraid of my father's opinion of me to this day. Like, I'm afraid that if I get a tattoo on my arm because he doesn't like tattoos, that he's going to spank me. Like, I'm afraid of what he's going to think and what he's going to say. And I think spanking children can really psychologically have effects on kids as they get older because it has on me.
Yeah, I think Lisa made the point, too, that if you live in a culture of fear, if you don't do things because you're afraid of what will happen to you, it's very different than not doing things because you recognize the difference between right and wrong and choosing to do the right thing and being able to rationally decide, make those decisions. It's very different.
And when we say our kids turned out fine because they have a job and whatever,
right.
The insecurities that Kelly's talking about, those are things that they are probably walking around with as well. Yes, they can function as adults, but there is an impact.
Yeah. Right. And Kelly, it sounds like what you're saying is you have a different reaction to men because your dad spanked you. Did your mom not spank you? Therefore, you don't think you have that same kind of reaction to disappointing a woman?
Absolutely. But authorities, I'm not really afraid of pissing off a woman authority, but I am gay, and I am afraid of pissing off my partner.
Interesting.
So it's an authority thing.
So it's an authority thing, I guess.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for the call. We really appreciate it. From Facebook, Logan writes in, "Hey, Kevin and Bean, I grew up in a small town in Alabama where it is legal to paddle a kid, and all it taught me was to wear several layers of underwear." So I think that's good. All right, let's do one more. How about Paulina? She's in Anaheim. She's on line 8. Hey, Paulina, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. We're going to give you the last word on this. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning.
So growing up, I was spanked and hit by both of my parents. I was an only child. So I kind of, like, if anything was wrong or anything bad happened, it was always my fault. So I was, you know, I was hit, and it wasn't light spanking. Like, I mean, I'm Hispanic, and, you know, they didn't really hold back too much. But I think the difference between, like, child abuse and all is that I never felt unloved. Like, I never felt like my parents hated me or they didn't love me.
You got spanked, you deserved it? Is that what you're saying?
Not so much deserved it. Obviously, I didn't like it. I mean, I was a kid. I don't think I understood it until I grew up. I think one time my mom explained it to me. She's like, I think parents hit their kids more out of frustration of themselves than of their actual kids, which is when because I remember she would always say to me, it hurts me more than it hurts you. And I would be like, really? Because I'm the one crying.
But isn't it a failure of being a parent allowing your frustration to get the better of you so that you lash out essentially and spank?
I think so.
I think it is. Exactly. That's what I think. So I think it's more the parent that's, like, doing it as opposed to, like, really the kid deserving it, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I'm pregnant now, and I'm going to have a little girl, and I don't think I'll hit her the way I was hit, but I don't think I won't incorporate maybe spanking her a little bit, you know. Like, I don't see that it being detrimental. I think what's important is always kind of making sure, you know, like, okay, I love you, or even apologizing afterwards. Because my mom or my dad would sometimes do that, be like, you know what, I'm sorry, I kind of crossed the line.
Wow, that's psychotic.
Why are you adopting that behavior? One of the things you said when you first called is, somehow I was the one who was responsible for everything. Like, you resented that, and you don't believe that.
You've got a chance to stop this. Stop this cycle.
Like, just draw the line. You're not going to do it.
You're not going to hit your kid. Why don't you try that first?
My fiance wasn't really hit as a kid, so he...
Well, hit him then. You start hitting your fiance. Every time you're mad at the kid, hit the father.
Hit somebody, for God's sake.
It's your fault.
All right, we're out of time,
right?
Paulina. Good
luck. I want to hit you right now, Paulina.
There's the band that killed it in the theater at the Ace Hotel downtown last night. K-Rock and Beats Music presented Coldplay. I listened to some of that on the radio, and it just sounded amazing. Turns out they're a really good live band.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it turns out. Another really good live band is called U2. Their current album, Songs of Innocence, is the most talked about record in the world. And we'll talk to Bono himself from the band in about 10 minutes. But first, Lisa, I don't know if you saw this latest outrage with Urban Outfitters. They've got a long history of putting things in their stores that people find offensive.
Yes, they seem to love it.
There's part of me that hates to give them the publicity for even talking about this, because we're saying the words Urban Outfitters, which is what they want. But this is almost hard to believe that they would do this. They put something up on their website that they described as a vintage, one-of-a-kind item. It is a Kent State University sweatshirt. Now, for folks who don't automatically have a reaction to the words Kent State, it's a college in Ohio where back in around, what was it, maybe 1970 or something like that?
Yeah.
There were student protests that got out of hand, and the Ohio National Guard came in and just opened fire on the crowd. Killed 4 people, wounded 9, I think. So that's the backstory on Kent State. So they're selling on UrbanOutfitters.com a Kent State sweatshirt that is splattered with what looks like blood.
That's really disgusting.
How is that a thing that anybody would even think of?
I can't imagine. I mean, first of all, what is the timing of this? That's pretty bizarre anyway.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's a real black mark in American history, and real people died. And I just can't imagine who thought that up and why they would think that was a good idea.
Well, you can imagine that there was immediate outrage and protest. Urban Outfitters issued an apology saying that the product was purchased as part of our sun-faded vintage collection. The company added that the bright red stains and holes, which certainly seemed to suggest blood and gunshots, were simply discoloration from the original shade of the shirt.
Ridiculous.
And the holes were from natural wear and tear.
No.
We deeply regret that this item was perceived negatively, because how could you perceive such a classy item negatively?
Why are they just lying?
Well, I don't know, Lisa, but we wanted to find out more about this because I find it as hard to believe as you do. So we asked Dave, who could we talk to from Urban Outfitters? And I believe we have spokesperson Steve Merkin on the line. Mr. Merkin, welcome, sir.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Hey, thanks. It's a great day to buy something from Urban Outfitters, isn't it?
Well, I don't think so. I think a lot of people are rethinking the shopping at Urban Outfitters as a result of this latest bad taste stunt that you guys pulled.
What? I am shocked. And may I add, deeply hurt that you would think that in any way this was an intentionally tasteless decision on our part to put this in our catalog.
It was a simple mistake.
Clear-cut, simple mistake. We had no idea that people could perceive this item in this way.
So, in other words, the blood and the holes in the sweatshirt that are Kent State was just a coincidence. It could have just as easily been the University of North Carolina sweatshirt. That's just not the one you put up on the site.
Exactly.
I don't believe
it. Simply something from our vintage collection. By the way, those stains weren't blood at all. They were discoloration.
Yeah, that's what you tried to tell us.
And
but
those
clearly,
holes were from natural wear and tear. They really weren't to emulate bullet holes in any way. In fact, I don't even know what happened against State. Do you? I have no idea what happened.
Yeah, I think it's pretty widely known and widely
reported. Nobody knows what happened there, really.
Why does Urban Outfitters keep doing stuff like this? Do you think it makes people want to shop at your store?
What are you talking about? I am hurt, and may I deeply offend that you think this is intentional on our part. It's like people just want to be offended. They go onto the internet and they look for things to be offended about, and then they pick on us. They pick on a small little company like Urban Outfitters, and we're deeply offended, frankly.
No, I don't believe
it
at all.
Some people are complaining about some of our other items on the website.
I'm not surprised.
Like the John F. Kennedy car seat covers.
Oh,
okay, that's a perfect example,
it's
Mr. Merkin.
It's just brain-colored dots on there. That's all.
You understand he was assassinated while riding in the backseat of a car. That's not an appropriate item.
What? That happened? That should have been in the news then.
It was in the news. Come on.
People upset about our Elvis Presley toilet seat. I mean, I can't imagine. Why? How could you be offended by that?
He died on the toilet. That's it's a very painful memory for Elvis Presley fans.
But why are people upset about the Marilyn Monroe pillbox?
Oh, God.
Okay, again, an overdose. Look, all of your items don't have to be about how people died.
We don't do that. I am deeply offended.
Deeply offended, yes.
I'm surprised that you would think that. I suppose you feel our Joan Rivers sore throat lozenges are in bad taste.
Too soon. From the new album, Songs of Innocence, new U2 here on the world-famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ. That is called The Miracle of Joey Ramone. They haven't put him on hold yet, have they? There he is. So we wake up a week ago Tuesday, Lisa, and we've all got, as a gift from U2, the new Songs of Innocence. It's right there on our phones, right there on our iPods. We can't – it's right – it didn't have to do anything. It's just there.
Couldn't be more convenient.
Same thing happening with the phones here at K-Rock. We're trying to use them all day. Every time we pick up a phone, Bono's on the line. What are we supposed to do with that? We can't get rid of this guy.
Because we have to talk to him.
Hey, Bono. Welcome back to K-Rock, my friend. How are you?
Oh, my God. I'm so excited you just played The Miracle of Joey Ramone on the radio. You have no idea how that makes me feel.
How can it still be a thrill for you 35 years later to hear your music on the radio? You understand that you're popular, right?
No. The insecurity is your best security. I'm always amazed that people are interested and we sometimes respond to that deep insecurity that makes everyone a singer or an artist with overwhelming force. You may have spotted this. But here's the thing. That song is so kind of unique and special and noisy And it's about the reason we're in a band. And this very morning, I woke up to an email from Joey Ramone's brother, Mickey.
Oh,
who
is about
so
that?
Thrilled and so excited. And the family are so thrilled to have their brother honored. And I'm so thrilled. And if you get a chance to read his book, he's a book, I think. It's called Sleeping with Johnny or something. It's brilliant.
Well, when I first
Sleeping
heard
with Joey,
the record.
Sleeping with Joey.
When I first heard the record last week, obviously that song stood out because of the mention of the Ramones in there. And that's a band that started, it can't be more than just a few months before you two started back in the 70s. Was their album in Ireland the big bang it was for you, like it was for so many groups in America when that record came out?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was like, yeah, it was the big bang because, I mean, punk rock was breaking. But it had come to the attention of my bandmates and indeed myself that my voice wasn't really suited to a lot of the kind of punk rock thing or even the kind of hard rock thing that was going at the time. I would try to sing like Mick Jagger, but it just wouldn't work out. And there was a show, one of our early shows, and somebody shouted up, "More punk in the Monkees." And I realized that I sang like a girl, and I was a bit depressed about it as a young Irish male. And then I realized, but Joey Ramone sings like a girl.
Ah.
He was inspired by all those great sirens as well as everything else. He had a beautiful melodic voice. And if I could be so lucky, I might try to have one of those. So that's how I got the gig.
It's been a little more than a week now since you surprised the world with the new album and the Apple promotion. How do you feel the launch was now that you've had a chance to look at it? How successful was it compared to what your expectations were going in?
Well, you know, I had just heard that 38 million people have listened to Songs of Innocence in the 7 days, which is more than anyone who's ever listened to the Joshua Tree. So now that does not mean that they've loved it, but they've listened to it. Mm-hmm. And if they like it and then love it, we will discover this in time. But all you want if you're a songwriter or, you know, in a band is you just want your songs to be known, for people to hear them And this was a great, and we're grateful to Apple for giving us a chance. They paid Universal for the privilege to do this, as they put it, because they know we're not into free music. But I thought it was an incredible thing for Apple to do.
How are you able to keep it a surprise? I mean, everywhere you go, people ask, hey, when's the next record coming out? And you pretty much had to lie to people that you didn't know. With all the people that were involved, producers and guest vocals and everything else, how come there was no leak on this up until last week?
That is the miracle of Joey Ramone. You're quite right. And, you know, it's odd because normally when you finish an album, it takes, like, you know, 2 months or 3 months before you put it out. But we had just done it a few days before. And I was sitting there with Kevin Weatherly playing him the songs. And I'm, you know, K-Rock's a very important station for our band. There's no more important station for our band since the very beginning. And he was like, why are you calling me up here? Why do you want me to play this? And I was saying, because I'm really excited about the songs and I want... with a bit of luck, maybe your DJs will play it. And he goes, yeah, it looks, sounds like we will play it. But I couldn't tell. I wanted to tell him, and I couldn't. So it was, but, you know, that was the fun of it, you know. And remember, this is kind of fun.
Sure.
Sort of, it's the punk rock thing to do, really, is to annoy people, get in their faces. And, you know, if people had a problem with the way we released the album, I mean, I'm sure they'd read about it online or something.
Sure, of course. Yeah. By the way, the last time we had you on the Kevin and Bean show, I don't know if you remember this or not, we did a breakfast with you two. We interviewed you. You guys played live. We were all drinking Guinnesses at 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I just remember how miserable Larry was. Like, to ask him to drum in a rock and roll band at 8 o'clock in the morning looked like the worst day of his life. I hope he's forgiven us at this point, Bono.
Well, have you heard the expression, happy as Larry?
I have heard that. Now we know where it came from. All right.
Well, Larry hasn't. But he's great. Yeah, he's playing. The rhythm section are really strong. We worked with such a genius record producer, Danger Mouse. Brian Burton is his name. And
certainly.
So the grooves are really going down. So Larry's very pleased. As long as the drums sound like the end of the world, Larry's happy.
Is it exhausting living your life, Bono? And by that I mean you're so busy with so many humanitarian causes and obviously running the company that is U2. Do you ever get to just shut off your phone and just be a guy sitting on the couch in your underpants watching TV?
The underwear thing is tricky because, you know, I don't wear any. But I'm sitting here with my children. I've got two boys. Now they don't wear underwear either. It's not a pretty sight watching the TV, but I've got girls who live in New York, one in Los Angeles, so you know I have a kind of itinerant life. But the family travel with us when we're on the road. We're a very close family. A lot of times we got big beds in our house. We end up sleeping in the same bed. It's fun. It's fun.
It sounds like you're able to have a personal life too. That's awesome. All right.
Yeah, no. Of course.
Before you go, and this has been all too brief, and I'm sorry. Your last tour was the most successful concert tour in the history of music. I'm sure you're excited to play these songs live. What can you tell us about that, if anything?
No, I mean, you know, we've got some stuff up our sleeve about playing live, and. You know, we're coming your way next year and maybe before that if we can cook up something. I want to play some of them acoustically because these songs were designed, and the reason it took a while to get there is we wanted not just the ideas or the lyrics or the fact that it's a really personal album, but we wanted the tunes, just properly great tunes that if you play them with acoustic guitar on a piano in a pub or... you know, that they would stop people from going home at closing time. They're that kind of tunes. And I want people to be aware of that, that the songs, and when all this hype and it's fun and everything and getting in people's faces fun, but I do want people to just listen to the tunes. And I think the best way to do that might be to do some acoustic sessions. So if we can with K-Rock, that's what I'd like to do. That might be the
that's
first
wonderful.
Thing you hear from me.
That's wonderful. And that's what I love about you, Bono, and about your group, is you guys are the biggest band in the world, but the music is still the most important thing, and that's the foundation upon which everything else is built. And I know you got to go. Thanks so much for getting up early. Thanks for calling in. We love you. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, dude. Okay. Bye-bye.
Walter O'Brien joins us in studio in about 10 minutes or so here on the Kevin Abid Show on K-Rock. You don't know the name, but you'll be impressed. He's got an IQ of 197. I wonder if he could have talked to Bono and not hung up on him at the end.
Yeah.
I think that would have been something that Walter could have handled.
I think someone with a 50-point IQ could have done that.
He was saying goodbye in the famous words of Kevin Ryder. He was.
Right, he was saying goodbye.
Yeah,
right.
I wasn't finished saying goodbye.
But
it wasn't over.
He said, okay, great, bye, love ya. And, like, he said five other things. When am I supposed to hang up?
You know what? When he finished talking, that's when you
exactly.
should have hung up. When he was
when
done.
The conversation is over,
we
that's
got bills
what you
to pay. We got bills. We got to get out.
You got to get out, that's for sure.
When you're watching a movie, do you go, there's 2 minutes left, close enough. I got the intent.
I don't need to know who the killer is.
They were wrapping up
the movie.
He's in the hang-up
chair.
Yeah.
I didn't
realize.
There's
nothing he could do.
There's nothing he could do. You sit in this chair.
It's
then
the
you,
hang-up chair.
You become it's just a terrorist situation.
Exactly.
Well, actually, I'm glad that Party Bus Kevin just made a surprise appearance here on the Kevin
Beach
Show.
You also are having me be here.
Party Bus Kevin, you're going to be very excited to hear this piece of tape that we have. We got time to play a couple of minutes of it. Cheryl Teagues is a name that maybe some of our listeners don't know.
Old, stupid, absurd.
That's right. She was very popular as a model, Sports Illustrated cover girl. She was a poster on every teenage boy's room back along
like
with Farrah Fawcett. No, in the 70s.
1912.
But she still has aged well. She's still a very attractive woman.
So ugly.
She's from Minnesota. And she was in Minnesota the other day, and they asked her to throw out the first pitch at a Twins-Tigers game. And then part of what they wanted her to do that same night was to go up into the booth during the fourth inning and sit in with the broadcasters who were calling the game. And Party Bus Kevin, I thought I was listening to you on the radio a little bit.
How dare you, absurd.
Here's how it begins with Cheryl Teagues, who's talking about why she actually wasn't able to throw out the first pitch as scheduled.
I did something to my knee, and it hurts like hell. And I can't twist my body left, right, whatever. Can I tell you that I threw out the first pitch for the Dodger game because I'm from Los Angeles?
You know,
it was a perfect pitch.
Was it?
Yep.
All right, stop right there. How drunk is she, you guys?
She does sound drunk.
She had a lot of beers at the party game.
When you hear somebody go, that's one indication that somebody is sloppy drunk. All right, here's poor Cheryl.
There's not a scratch on the ball. There's not a piece of dirt on the ball.
All right.
I was right up there. Well, Ronald McDonald House is just an amazing program. Everybody, please go out and research it, look out about it, learn something about it.
All right, stop right there. Party Bus Kevin, what's she trying to tell me about Ronald McDonald House?
Don't be stupid. She wants you to look out about it and go online and be all of about it and have to give good service.
Okay. All right, more please.
Cambria is their sponsor, and they have made these houses livable, environmentally correct. They've been involved with Ronald McDonald for such a long time, and I'm telling you, I mean, that is, unheard of, and the generosity is outstanding.
Okay. So. All right, stop right there. So there's something about the frequency of where she's keeping her voice. Is it like she's
there
trying to?
Is she? What's I understand happening? What she's saying.
Oh, you do?
You
good.
Don't get it, but I know she not has the environmentalist impact of the house.
Right.
She's often in business with Ronald McDonald.
Apparently, she's very happy about her association with Ronald McDonald. All right, bring it home for me, Cheryl Teagues.
I've been working with Cambria for, 7-8 years, something like that. And it's a natural. Cambria makes natural quartz countertops.
Sure.
So they made these houses comfortable and invite. Aren't we supposed to be watching the game?
Well, we are watching the game, but we're supposed to be talking about your connection with the game.
Well, okay. I'll just keep talking.
Okay, I don't think that's necessary, actually.
Oh, thank you very
I'll
much,
I'll just
Cheryl.
Keep talking, too. I don't care.
It's so awkward for them.
You're awkward.
It's so awkward. I'm listening to those poor broadcasters trying to call the Twins game, and I feel like I know exactly how they feel. I have been those guys for 25 years.
I can never have put natural quartz in your house.
That's an excellent point, Kevin. Thank you.
See the double flap.
That song needs the double clap.
It
no,
sure does.
Not every song
it
needs
does.
The Ralph Garman double clap
needs
remix.
The double clap.
He's doing fine without the
he
double clap.
He needs the double clap.
All right. I got a question for you guys, and I'm serious about this. Right. And I know we've talked about it from time to time in the past, but it's been a long time. If you are incredibly smart, I mean like IQ way up there, close to 200, off the charts intelligent.
And I am, yes.
Do you have trouble, as they always make you think on TV, like with this new show, Scorpion, do you have trouble just navigating the world, just accomplishing tasks like getting dressed in the morning and getting out the door and maybe getting in your car and maybe getting to a radio interview on time? Is that part of what – is that the downside of being super smart is you don't know how to get to a place on time?
Yes. He's got bigger fish to fry in his head, and he doesn't need to deal with the picayune details of getting to a radio interview on time. That's what Walter O'Brien's got going on.
I wonder about these super, super smart guys like – he's the guy that the show Scorpion is based on. He's apparently the fourth smartest guy in the world, 197 IQ. He's supposed to be here. He's not. Now, is that because he's sitting somewhere on a bench and he, in his mind, is solving the problem on how to, you know, do space travel?
Yes.
Space travel across dimensions or something like that. And he can't be bothered to look at his watch.
He's almost cracked cold fusion. And he doesn't need to talk to some chuckleheads on the radio. Bean, why don't you cut him up some slack?
I think it would be fascinating, especially since Mr. O'Brien is not here and we now have the time, to talk to our listeners who are – and I think we've addressed Mensa before, but to talk to our listeners who are just off the charts smart, like super, super high IQ, and find out what the pluses are of that and what the minuses are of that.
Do you think if there are such people, they're listening to this radio show? You think we have super smart listeners?
That's someone really who's listening to this show.
Yeah, maybe they're accidentally around the radio and this happens to be on. Maybe we can
They've got
out.
A spouse or a kid who's quote unquote normal and maybe they're listening just for them.
Yeah.
So I want to hear from you if you're really, really exceptionally smart, not just bright, but like this guy, you know, 150 or above. I want to hear from you at 1-800-520-1067 because I imagine there really are some downsides to that. Just like although we don't feel sorry for them, there are some super downsides to people who are ridiculously, impossibly good looking. On the surface, it looks like nothing but grins, but I mean, there are some negatives to it as well.
I'm curious, Bean, have you ever had your IQ tested?
If I have, it would have been when I was a little kid, I don't know.
Because I suspect your IQ is remarkably high.
I imagine it is.
I don't think so.
Oh, yes. I would guess you are in the upper echelon of IQ. You strike me as someone who is exceedingly smart and exceedingly cerebral, and as a result of that, you're barely a functioning human being.
I knew that was going to turn into a negative at some point.
That's not a negative. It's like you're saying, that's the downside.
There's
the upside
the
is
the down.
You're an evil genius. The downside is you're kind of a dick.
Asperger's is a condition on the autistic spectrum, which makes it difficult for a person to make connections with other people.
Right. But you're also smart, so you got that going for you.
Well, I will tell you that I don't know why I have trouble relating to most people, why I find myself out of sync perhaps in social situations. I don't think it has anything to do with intelligence.
I really don't. I think you're exceedingly intelligent, and I think a byproduct of that is a bit of social awkwardness.
Well, so do you think those two always go hand in hand? Do you think you don't find a regular guy who you can have over to watch the Eagles game and drink a beer and eat a pizza if he's super, super smart? Is that just something that is beneath his interest?
No, I think super smart comes with it a certain isolation because, by definition, you are sort of outside the norm. You are unlike a lot of other people.
People don't understand you.
Yeah, and your brain works differently than other people's brains. And let's think about it. The brain is the second most important organ in my body.
All right. Well, let's take a couple of calls from our listeners who are
Mega smart at 1-800-520-1067. Like our friend Walter O'Brien, who couldn't be bothered to be here this morning. Let's see what Lee's got going on. She's from Long Beach. Lee, what's your you're one of those people who actually knows what your IQ is, right? What is it?
171. First time it was 158. Second time it was 171.
Oh, wow.
You got smarter. When did you have that tested? When did you get that number?
First time I was 10. Second time I was 16.
Why do they do IQ tests when you're little instead of when you're older and you've had the opportunity to learn and know more stuff?
I think because I kept skipping grades and I refused to speak with kids my age. I was very socially awkward.
Huh. And now, I don't know anything about the IQ examination, but it's not necessarily a test of facts and things that you know. It's about your ability to learn and the way your brain works, right?
Yeah, how you process things, how you it was a 2.5 hour one, the when I was 16, and it was one-on-one, and it was a lot of questions, a lot of pictures, and
Lee, what's an example of the type of question or situation that you, because of your high IQ, would perceive or understand differently than the rest of us would? Like, in what kinds of situations is a high IQ especially useful for you?
With work, absolutely. Being like analytical, it's very it's very helpful, and be able to process things like chess. You know, everything to me is like a chess game. But the ones that I fail at miserably is anything interpersonal. I mean, like, you know, people's birthdays, things like that. I don't find them. I don't know. I'm just not sensitive to things that are so important to everybody else. Does that make sense?
Isn't that interesting, Ralph? Because you know I don't celebrate birthdays at all. Yeah. No interest whatsoever in those types of things. What's it like romantically for a woman to be as smart as you are? Have you found it difficult to find a man who would be willing to date someone who is so much smarter than they are?
1,000,000%. I've gotten, you know, I've gotten engaged, but I have never made it across any type of threshold because it always ends up being the same. I'm friends with all of them, but it ends up being not intimidating. What's the word? Intimidating.
Probably.
You sound hot too, Lee. Are you hot?
You really do.
Being smart.
Hello. Well, my first name's Jennifer, so yes, you know I'm.
That's all we need to know.
Oh my goodness.
Jennifer, I'm so in love with you right now. Yeah. So in love with you. Bad. All right. Is it is it more of a blessing or more of a curse for you, do you think?
Blessing in as far as success and work, a curse as far as anything personal.
Personal,
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very, very much for sharing your story, and thanks for listening to the Kevin. Thanks for swimming by listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. I'm sure most of the time it bores you to tears.
I only listen for Lisa.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Most of our smarter listeners do, Jennifer.
All right, Lee. Thanks very much. We're going to take a quick break. We've got, believe it or not, Ralph, we've got tons of super smart people listening this morning.
We'll have to be the judge of that, quite frankly.
1-800-520-1067. You've got the ultra-high IQ. How's that going? We'll take your calls next on K-Rock. Chris writes in on the Kevin and Bean Twitter account, which, by the way, is at Kevin and Bean. I usually side with Bean, but in this case, I must agree with Ralph. I am pro-double clap during riptide.
Thank
so there you.
You
go. So we settled that one. That important issue.
He's smart. He must have an IQ about 190.
We're taking your calls right now from the super high IQ crowd. We were scheduled to have a guest named Walter O'Brien on, who apparently has an IQ of 197. Yeah. He's the guy that they based this new TV show coming up on CBS on the 22nd called Scorpion about. He was a computer hacker, broke into the Pentagon's mainframe at 13, the Bank of England at 16. They use him in real-life law enforcement situations to fight crime. But I guess they just don't count on him showing up on time when
they
do that.
I think they go to him.
Because he was not here today. So we were asking the question. I wonder if the reason he's not here is directly a result of how smart he is. Like, if he has trouble navigating through the world like a regular person because he's got more important things on his brain. So we thought it might be fun to talk to our listeners who maybe are in the same boat. Let's go to Christina. She's in L.A., and she joins us up next on Line 8. Hi, Christina. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. Thanks for calling, and thanks for holding. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning.
Your IQ is what, if you know?
157.
Is that super smart, 157?
It's over 150, guys.
All right, 150 easy. I don't know. I'm asking a question.
We don't know because we're dumb.
150 is considered genius, right?
Oh,
anything above 150 is genius,
okay.
Right?
I didn't know that.
That was when I was 11. It was checked.
All right, Christina, jeez.
Come on, guys,
being a bitch part of the byproduct of being smart?
Hey, Christina's not being a bitch.
Wow.
Go ahead, Christina.
We're going to try to get in a bunch of calls, so we don't have a lot of time with you, Christina. But what in general is it like for you being that smart?
I think it's a little bit hard to focus on daily tasks or just anything, conversations, because you're focused on really strange minutiae that kind of stands out at you. I notice I dissect conversations while they're happening, so sometimes I lose being in the moment. And I'm like, oh, wait, what's going on? Because you find one little thing that you start dissecting, and then you go into your own – you're so much in your own head that you lose sight of everything else that's going on around you sometimes.
Is there any particular area that you are incredibly strong in? Like, for instance, this guy, Walter O'Brien, he has a photographic memory. Do you have any, like, special
party
trick skills like that?
Oh, that's me. They call me Rain Man at
work.
Really?
Oh, that must be the
best. You have a superpower.
Are you like Rain Man in the movie where I could drop a box of pencils in front of you and you could tell me how many are in it before they hit the ground?
No, that'd be awesome, but no. But it's like if somebody says something, it's photographic memory. I remember people, like, exact statements really well. So if somebody said something, I could repeat the exact sentence they said, when they said it, what they were wearing, where they were standing.
Wow.
That's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
That is so the opposite.
You're like Rain Man.
Last
so
question,
really hard
Christina.
Hard losing arguments with me too. That's
tough. Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I just bet that even when you're wrong,
you
it's easy losing an argument with you.
Boyfriend or husband? How's that been working out for you?
I have a husband. He's also really smart. So it's kind of the same thing. He focuses on, like, we can't leave the house. It takes like an hour longer to leave the house because he finds something that needs to be fixed, or he has an idea and he needs to write it down and he needs to research it. And then I'm like,
boy,
dude, we got to go.
Yeah, you guys are a tedious couple.
Yes.
All right, Christina, thank you for the call.
At least they found each other.
It's good that they found each other. Let's go to Dave. We've heard from ladies so far. Let's go to Dave. He's in Menifee. He's on line one. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the Kevin Devine Show. Good morning.
What's going on, guys? Hi, Lisa May.
Hi, Dave.
Menifee. I guarantee you're the smartest guy in Menifee.
I actually live right on the outskirts of Menifee in a place called Canyon Lake. It's a nice little community.
All right. You say so.
Well, good for you. So you've been hearing the ladies that we've spoken with. Is your story similar?
It's kind of similar. I actually really related to the last caller who said they have a hard time being in conversations with some people because I start processing things before people are done with their conversation.
Wow.
And I lose exactly what they're saying.
Hmm. So do you get frustrated a lot just in the average encounter of checking out at a supermarket or going to eat at a restaurant? Are your interactions with normal folks just something that drive you crazy?
Not really. It's more the short-term conversations, I'm fine. But it's when I start getting in conversations, like, long-term. Mm-hmm. Like, not in the long-term, but a kind of a longer conversation. And I start trying to process, like, what's going to be said or what I'm going to be saying. And when I was 17, I had a 168 IQ. But I didn't graduate high school. And all through elementary school and junior high, I received failing grades.
Because you just paid no attention?
Well, that's what they figured out finally, was that I couldn't focus on the work. Mm-hmm. Any time I took tests, I aced them. Like, I was in sixth grade, I was reading at a 12th grade level, and my math skills were off the chart. Everything was real high, but I couldn't handle sitting in class doing just basic work.
Yeah.
Sure.
Huh.
Because your mind was off doing other stuff and looking for patterns and figuring out other things while the conversation was going on.
Exactly. And my wife gets so frustrated with me now because simple tasks, well, that I think are simple, like something, transferring something on the computer to something else, I'm just like, oh, yeah, you just do this. And she's like, well, wait, how do I turn on the computer? You know? And it gets real frustrating.
Dave, have you been able to take your high IQ into some sort of really cool, lucrative job?
Well, I'm really good with playing guitar. I pick that up really fast, like learning new songs.
Mm-hmm.
But I manage a pawn shop. I have to deal with numbers and equations all day, dealing with money and gold weight and all that kind of stuff. So
isn't that interesting?
Keeps you stimulated.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That should be a reality show. Genius Pawn.
Yeah.
Pawn Genius or something.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave. We appreciate the call. Why are all these smart people listening to this show, by the way?
I have no idea.
There's just
I mean,
nothing else on.
This is just crazy.
Maybe it's a vacation for them. They can turn off their brain for a minute.
I think this will be interesting. Let's talk to Lori in Irvine. She's on line six. I want to talk to her because she's a family member of one of these super smart people. We've heard it from their mouths what they think it's like. Let's find out what it's like living with one of these monsters. Hi, Lori. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hi.
So your husband is the genius in the family.
Yes, he's incredibly smart. He does have that photographic memory. He can close his eyes and go back to any page that he's seen and just pinpoint whatever he was looking for.
Wow.
It's crazy. And years back, like, he can remember something from, like, 10 years ago, word-for-word conversation, or even the whole damn movie of something. I don't even recall watching. And he can tell you every detail. And he's like, I hate watching chick flicks because it takes up all my memory. Like, why do I have this movie in my mind? I don't need it. And it stays there forever.
So what's it like with for you with just the typical, you know, conversation slash disagreements, conflicts that men and women have? Is it an incredibly frustrating experience with him because he's so damned logical, or is he able to find an empathetic side too?
Sometimes he can be empathetic, yeah, but it's hard because he wins everything because he can remember everything.
Yeah.
So he can repeat everything you just said back to you, and you're like, oh, did I really say it like that?
You're married to a Vulcan, Lori.
When you first met him and started dating, was his intelligence a super turn-on for you?
Yes, it still is, actually. Mm. Yes, I love him more now than I did when I met him, and I didn't think that was possible.
Oh, that's cool.
And he can recall exactly what you look like naked anytime he wants in his mind.
Oh, gosh, I've never even thought of that.
That's awesome. All right, Lori, thanks so much for the call. So our lesson here is what? Have handlers, I guess. If you're going to be super smart and you're supposed to be someplace on time like our guest, have a normal person who can keep track of your calendar for you and maybe drive you around.
Give the little people a gig.
Hey!
Hey? Ugh. Ralph is here with the Showbiz Beat on K-Rock, but before we get to that, Ralph, with your permission, I called up to the lab on 13 and asked them to pull the tape at the end about the end of the Bono conversation.
Yes. Oh, good.
Do you mind? Can we have just 10 seconds here? Let's hear how Beer Mug decided the call should end with Bono from U2 on our show. Thanks so much for getting up early. Thanks for calling in. We love you. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, dude. Okay. Bye-bye.
Love to love you, baby.
Aww. Love. I'm going to love giving you guys $1 million each when next time I see you. Who knows?
Could have been. Who knows? Might have been.
We will never because Beer Mug decided it was within his power to cut off one of the biggest rock stars in the world.
Well, that's what we do.
Look, he said, thanks, dude, followed by okay, followed by bye-bye. You think that would be an appropriate time to hang up?
No, the appropriate time would be when he stops speaking. That's
right.
when he's done talking. The phone call was over. When he speaks, yeah, I know he's a crazy idea. Let him hang the F up. He's Bono. Why don't you wait till you hear a click on from his end, and then that's how you'll know the conversation is truly, officially, and finally over.
Look, you got to keep it tight. It's radio. We keep moving.
God damn you. We have time for all kinds of nonsense on this show. The least we could give Bono is another millisecond to finish
his
conversation.
That's all we're asking. Just let the man finish. That's it. What on earth, Bugs, could you have been trying to get to that was more important than Bono's voice on K-Rock?
Did Kat's mom have to sell us another Mercedes-Benz? Is that what you're concerned about?
Yes, and I got to manage the clock. So we got to get.
It's so hot! The air conditioner is not working!
Look, he's the biggest, the star of the biggest band in the history of K-Rock. Let the man say goodbye.
He did say bye-bye. Okay and thanks, dude.
Let me hear the tape again, and you tell me if it sounded to you like his last word was finished.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for getting up early. Thanks for calling in. We love you. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, dude. Okay. Bye-bye. Look.
Right on the tail of bye-bye.
Love to see you soon. Love to be. Love to come into the studio next time. I'm sure whatever he had to say was more interesting than whatever you'll do with your entire life.
How dare you?
That last four words of that conversation would have been much more meaningful than your entire meager existence.
How dare you?
Fire Beer Mug.
Oh,
I'll say.
Jesus.
All right, time for the Showbiz Beat. Then Dr. Drew joins us coming up after 9.
NBC this morning has announced who will take over as the announcer for Saturday Night Live as they start their new season. And I think they've made a wise choice.
I think it's
Adele
terrible
Dazeem.
That they fired. Nope.
Adele Dazeem.
Pretty sure that's not it. It's terrible that they fired Don Pardo.
I know.
I mean, let the man work till the end. The
guy's been there forever. And they
44 years he's been there.
They bounce
give him a pink slip.
You guys?
That is rude.
Seriously.
And it's a little ageist, too. I think, maybe he's been too long in the tooth. He can't be the announcer
anymore.
He's
done a great job. He's a legend.
Screw him.
Passed
he's been
away.
There since the beginning. And now, Lorne Michaels
knows
hold on, better.
Hold on. Mugg's trying to say something. What, Mugg's?
He passed away, you guys.
What?
Oh, I had no idea. I gotta send his family a card. Now that Don is gone, Lorne Michaels has tapped Daryl Hammond. Former cast member Daryl Hammond.
Oh.
Will
now
great
be
choice.
The announcer for Saturday Night Live.
Let's keep it in the family, right?
Yep. Hammond, by the way, SNL's longest running cast member in its history. He was on the show from 1995 to 2009.
Wow.
14 years he spent with the show. And he's coming back to be their announcer, and it's also suspected he may show up from time to time at sketches and doing his impressions and things like that. Regarding impressions, he won't be doing a Pardo impression, although he has done that in the past. There was a show, apparently, where Don Pardo had laryngitis, showed up to the studio and couldn't work, and so Hammond stepped in and did a Don Pardo impression, and no one was the wiser.
Well, he's a master impressionist.
Yes,
I mean,
right.
I don't doubt that at all. That's fantastic. He was great on SNL, and he's one of those guys who I am surprised did not go on to a more successful post-SNL career, because he's very talented.
Yes. Well, here's the thing about guys like Hammond. They're brilliant impersonators and character guys, but they don't really have a strong, identifiable persona themselves. And so when you take them out of the sketch world, it's kind of hard for them to establish a presence as themselves, because there's not much there. They're so much stronger
they
when
their
they're
own
playing other people.
Right.
Yeah, so
that makes sense.
Kylie Jenner, she is the youngest, I believe, the youngest of that clan. I think Kendall,
I don't know
Kendall's
if it's Kylie
older,
or
right?
Kendall. I don't know which is which.
Anyway,
but
they're just all hard.
She's a bitch.
I don't know about that, but she has decided she is not going to follow her sister's footsteps into the world of high fashion. Kylie Jenner reportedly has hired a vocal coach and producer and is working on her first single.
Some dreams come true.
She's just going to be the next big pop singer. That's her her goal.
So none of these girls are going to college.
No, none of them are actually going to do anything with their lives. No, you have to go you have to go from puberty to stardom somehow in that family or else you don't count.
Wow.
How awesome would it be if one of them said, you know, I'm going to go to school and become a veterinarian. Kris Jenner's head would explode.
I know. How would she make money off that?
She would make A.J. Peterson look like a reasonable parent if one of those kids said they're going to go off and just have a normal life.
Where she couldn't manage them.
And couldn't collect money off of them,
right.
More importantly.
Yeah, no kidding. I wonder if, what the percentage is of people who are wealthy who decide not to go to college. It's got to be incredibly high, because the reason most people go to college is so that they are set up to find a better job for the rest of their life, right? If you've already got no money worries, maybe it's easy to say, well, I don't need college.
I guess, but even if that's the case, you have no money worries, couldn't you maybe find something to do that would be a little bit more, I don't know, fulfilling?
Yeah,
deeper or interesting?
Absolutely.
Could be another pop singer, another runway model? Does the world need any of that?
Are you going to design fashion bags?
Ugh. Blech. Blech. People are gross.
We've already got the It's All About the Bass Girl. We're filled up. We don't need anyone else.
All about the bass. No trouble.
Whoopee-doo.
Love that song. Today's celebrity birthdays. Fred Willard is 81 years old today. Never mind.
Just leave it alone.
Where do you think he'll go today for his birthday, Ralph?
I do not know, but I hope his pants are zipped. Aisha Tyler's 44 years old today. Jada Pinkett Smith turns 43. And Jason Sudeikis, speaking of Saturday Night Live, as we were just moments ago, he is a wildly popular and successful alum from that show. He is 39 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Yes, ladies, the very hunky actor Dylan O'Brien will be joining us in about 15 minutes or so here on K-Rock, one of the stars of Teen Wolf on MTV, and, of course, the new film called The Maze Runner that does actually, if I can be honest, look kind of awesome.
It
so
looks
we'll talk to
cool.
Dylan. That is coming up. Speaking of hunky guys, how about our good friend Dr. Drew Pinsky, who stops by every Thursday morning here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Doc, how are you, man?
Hey, Bean. Thanks for having me.
I understand you are in Denver. You're out there spreading the word, flying the flag on prostate cancer awareness. So what are you doing, handing out like x-rays of your butt, or how's that work?
Oh.
I just don't know what's involved in promoting that.
Well, first of all, I'm in Denver promoting a community-based addiction treatment center called Arapahoe House, and then I go to New York, and then I do prostate cancer awareness because it's Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and my story sort of has some meaning. You know, I had prostate cancer, and a lot of men get it. Bean, you could too if you live long enough, and the treatments are available and curative, and I just want men to be really out there screening because early, you know, this is one of those cancers you get early, you can look forward to cure.
Right. And by screening, you mean that's where you go to the doctor and you have them touch you, right?
That's the picture of the butt part, yeah.
Right. I mean, but that's the only way. It's not like there's a pill you can take or anything like that. I mean, you just have to be constantly monitoring what's going on with your prostate, right?
Yeah. If you have a first-degree relative under the age of 65 against prostate cancer, you start PSA screening, blood screening at 40, everyone else 50, and a digital rectal exam, as you say, Bean. I know you enjoy that part, and you got to do that too. But it's, you know, it again, there's controversy about how intensively to monitor the PSA and what to do in response to it. But that's something every patient should decide with their physician.
I mean, you literally would be dead right now if you had not been proactive enough about your prostate, right?
Thank you, Bean. Thank you. You always have a way of distilling things down. But I would not be dead at the moment, but I would probably have a significantly shortened life and lots of misery and trouble. Little brief period of misery, and that was the end of that.
Lesson learned. Hey, listen, while we're on the topic of men's health, there's something that I saw last week that kind of blew my mind a little bit because it sounded like they have made tremendous inroads on the holy grail of birth control, which is to get it on the men rather than on the women. There's something called Vasil Gel. Do you know anything about that, Doc?
I do, and, you know, it's not at all what you were thinking of being in terms of like a pill or a shot, which is really the holy grail. This is... You're going to love this. Get the horror music handy.
Okay, it's that bad?
Well, it's a gel. It's like a gelatinous gel that they inject into your vas deferens, into your groin.
Oh, my God.
Music, please. Yeah, thank you.
So it's a shot that they put into your groin?
And it's so bizarre that this story caught on, Bean. I got to tell you, I've actually been asked about it in multiple medias, and it's not even been tested on humans yet.
Right, but they're having tremendous success with it with baboons, yeah, is what I understand.
That's right. With injecting this jelly into their vas deferens, it's a vasectomy. It's a vasectomy without burning, without tying. It's just the jelly they stick into the same tube that you would cut in a vasectomy. And the advantage seems to be that you can flush it out. You can reverse it pretty reliably if it works. Now, they've got to still see that it doesn't cause – it worries me. I got to tell you, I bet you're going to see lots of weird infections and things. But we'll see. It's a move forward. And
why do they call it Vasil Gel? Doesn't that sound like that should be a lady product?
Because it's a gel for the vas deferens.
That makes sense. Okay, I gotcha. So in a perfect world, I guess you're right, I did misunderstand. I was thinking this was more like a pill. So in a perfect world, what you would be trying to do is to allow semen to still be a thing that happens, but without the sperm, that's the part that gets you pregnant, right? And that's the trick, is trying to figure out a way to separate those two things.
Well, that's if you're going to do something mechanical. But if you're going to do a real pill, there's all kinds of ways to attack the sperm, which is you can make their tail not work. You can make them unable to capacitate. They have to, the head of the sperm, a special chemical reaction has to happen for it to be able to penetrate the egg. There's all kinds of ways to disable the sperm. But unfortunately, a lot of these things, what you can't do is suppress the sperm production. You can't, the way you can in a woman, give enough hormone to reduce the egg, to prevent an egg from being released, you really can't do that in a male. You can't prevent the sperm production. So you have to do something to the sperm, either preventing it from getting into the semen, as you say, or incapacitated in some way.
Gotcha. Now, is this something that you think we'll see in our lifetimes, Dr. Drew, or is this just is this too tough for them to crack?
No, I do think we'll see it. I do, but I think it was Corolla said, his concern is that men will claim they took it and then go, no, let's just go. Come on, I took it. I did. You know what I mean? They're not going to be reliable enough.
But all right, let me ask you.
Yeah, go ahead.
One more question on this, and that is, imagine what that would be politically, if now we were dealing with male birth control. That would really kind of upset a lot of people who have really spent their entire political careers trying to restrict women from accessing birth control. Now they'd have to do the same to men.
I think they would. I think they would. And but I got to say, that whole world of objection to, like, the morning after pill, which is just the birth control pill taken the day after as opposed to the morning before, they don't really pay attention to science, so who knows how they're going to interpret it. And I want an apology for everybody that told me that the emergency contraceptive was an abortion pill. It is not an abortion pill any more than the pill you take every day. All hormonal contraceptive has the potential to interfere with implantation. So if you really have a thing about implantation, you've got to be against all hormonal contraceptives. And, of course, no one takes that position. Some
Said, Dr. Drew. I mean, I think the bottom line is what we should strive for is that people who want to get pregnant and have babies should, and people who don't shouldn't. And that should be our goal.
Unless you're a teenager and then watch Teen Mom and decide you don't want to have them.
Exactly. The Dr. Drew Fine Family of Podcasts are available at drdrew.com and podcast1.com. Of course, you got them here on Loveline on K-Rock 5 nights a week, Sunday through Thursday with our friend Mike Catherwood. And then Dr. Drew on call, HLN, Monday through Thursday nights at 6. Have fun in Denver and then in New York, and we'll talk to you next week, Doc. Thanks for the time.
Thanks. Thank you.
Here's the synopsis of The Maze Runner, Lisa.
Okay.
When Thomas wakes up trapped in a massive maze with a group of other boys, he has no memory of the outside world other than the strange dreams about a mysterious organization known as WCKD, which, by the way, is where I did mornings in the 90s. I was at Wicked FM, if you recall. Only by piecing together fragments of his past with his clues does he discover in the maze that Thomas hopes to uncover his true purpose and a way to escape. Based on the best-selling novel by James Dashner. That sounds incredible, by the way. Maze Runner is the movie opening up everywhere this weekend, and the Thomas we talked about is played by actor Dylan O'Brien, who joins us here on the Kevin Bean Show on K-Rock right now. Hi, Dylan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Good morning.
Doing great. Hey, you you did some growing up here in Southern California. What part?
Well, I went to high school, MiraCosta High School, at Manhattan Beach.
And that's home of the what? Who's the team down there?
Oh, home of the Mustangs, yeah.
Go Mustangs. Love it.
Yeah, right on.
I saw you a couple of times at Comic-Con this past summer, which I can't even imagine what that was like for you because of Teen Wolf and because of all the anticipation for The Maze Runner. But it looked – I mean, it was insane to see how many people, when they spot you, would just go ballistic. I mean, people were – you everywhere. What was that weekend like for you?
Well, it's I don't know, it's definitely weird, I guess, because you know, you go to this world where all of a sudden you're like, I guess it's very much a fan convention, you know, so it's like unusual to be there. You're almost like just treated like a rock star, you know, almost like not deservingly so. So you just kind of feel really odd. You have to get like walked around by security and I don't know, but I mean, mainly it's just cool because it's just, you know, it's just constant support for the stuff you're doing, and to be there is like always an honor. And so it's just exciting, especially to have, you know, my TV show and this movie both close to my heart, you know, there. It's very cool.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, you know, you're used to a certain amount of fame and a certain amount of getting recognized because Teen Wolf is very popular. You get recognized every day, I'm sure. But you are being dropped into thousands of people who are like hyper-focused on entertainment, and they are the super fans. And that must have been what was so crazy about it.
Yeah, I think that's what's so extreme. They're just like the super fans, you know? They're like a legion of just really good fans.
Well, hey, look, when you got a movie opening, that's what you want, because you know those people know the movie's opening this weekend, and you know that they're planning on going, and that's exactly the kind of support you need.
Yeah, exactly. It's great.
This Maze Runner, the trailer is unlike anything I've seen before. Forgive me if this is a dumb question, Dylan, but, I mean, did they build an actual real wall, or is that all CG?
It's surprisingly enough, more of a balance than you would expect. I mean, you know, a lot of it obviously is VFX. But you know, in what's called the Glade, you know, the environment that these boys are trapped in, we actually, you know, we built that place in like, you know, a guy's like 600 acre backyard in Louisiana. And like, that's all actually there. And, you know, the threshold of the doors, that you see all the time in the trailer is like actually there. And then it's just they're actually there. They actually worked. They moved, and they opened and they shut. They were like 2,000-pound concrete doors, and then everything's just kind of enhanced with the VFX and more like extended. You know, like we couldn't make the walls as high as they are in the movie. And things
yeah,
like
there's
that.
Nothing like that on Earth. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that'd be crazy.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you've been talking about how, because a lot of people, they like to, you know, they know the Maze Runner has that fan base from the book, and a lot of people like to compare it to some of the other quote-unquote young adult stuff. But you've been very clear in press that you've done for this. This is not a romance. This is not going to be, you know, a Twilight or something like that.
Yeah.
And having said that, and I think that's cool because you got other, you know, important things on your mind with surviving. But having said that, what does it do to a group of 50 guys, most of whom are teenagers, to have one girl thrown in the mix? I would think that that would upsets everything, right?
Yeah, yeah. I know. We always joked about that when that was one of the things we loved to, like, riff on was, like, the fact that, like, a girl shows up, and I think every guy would – just be like, oh, like, you know, I got it.
Mine.
I got it. Mine. Come on. You
mine. Dibs.
But you know, that's something I love so much about the movie. Like, you know, one of the things that we're all just really proud of coming away with this is that, you know, we really just went mostly for just an authentic feel, like, you know, more so than like a YA movie. And so that plays into that. You know, there's literally, you know, in the circumstances that these kids are in, there's just literally no time that, you know, for that to even occur or for, like, you know, flirtation to even arise or, like, you know, romance to even be there or for them to all even, like, you know, make a thing about a girl arriving, you know, like, in more than a what's going on, like, I hope we don't die way. You know what I mean? It's just, like, it's very grounded and very real in that sense, and that's why we didn't add the romance, and I'm a huge advocate for that. I just, you know, I think it makes it a really gritty, real, you know, sci-fi action movie that I think you know, adults and kids alike, hopefully, ideally, that's the idea, are gonna enjoy.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think I mean, that speaks to how terrifying this situation that they find themselves in. I mean, if you can get a guy to not think about a girl, you know,
right?
He's got some S going on.
Exactly, and you know, especially 30 plus guys.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
How much running did you have to do as the Maze Runner?
A lot. It's actually funny. Everyone who watches the movie says, oh my God, you know, that's crazy. How did you get through that? And then, like me, I watch the movie and I'm like, I'm always so shocked at how little running, like, made it onto the screen. Cause I felt like that was like 90% of my days. It was a lot of running. And I think, you know, some of that just obviously takes more time. The action stuff. So it's just, involves more of repeating it over and over and just spending more time on the running stuff. So that's probably why it felt like I ran, you know, over 1,000 miles.
Yeah, I bet.
And like maybe three made it to the film.
Last question for our guest, Dylan O'Brien here on the Kevin Beach Show, talking about his film called The Maze Runner, opening everywhere this weekend. And that is, did you have much interaction with the man who wrote the book, James Dashner? And how involved was he in saying, hey, yeah, that guy right there, he's my Thomas?
I don't know, actually. I mean, I think I feel like he may have been a part of the approval process. I actually haven't even asked him that yet. I got to ask. James is an amazing guy, and he's like, he's ridiculously sweet and grounded and normal and loves movies and loves books and stories. And, he's just like so giddy that this movie is, even made, you know, let alone like something that he loves so much. And, I got to meet James, funny enough, for the first time, not till like the last couple weeks of shooting. And I was sort of like nervous to meet him at first, you know, because I'm like, oh my God, I hope this guy approves me. And
yeah,
then, like,
right.
Within 3 seconds, I was fine because he's just the sweetest. Just like, let me just tell you that you, like, I just have been seeing pictures and I can just tell your performance is just spot on. And I'm like, what? Through pictures?
Well, that's
okay,
awesome.
Fine. Yeah, great. Yeah, it just makes you feel, you know, so backed. And I think it helps with the fans too. It's sort of like, you know, he's just so supportive of our movie, every even tiny little change that we've made. And, you know, it kind of just helps the fans just be excited about it anyway and not feel the need to critique it or anything. Just enjoy it.
Exactly. Hey, if the movie's good enough for the man who wrote the book, it's good enough for you. Damn it. Go
right.
See it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is called The Maze Runner, opening up everywhere this weekend. Please go see it. Dylan, I'm glad we got a chance to chat with you. Hey, say hi to our pal Tyler when you see him next time you guys are back at the Teen Wolf, too, all right?
Oh, absolutely, I will.
All right, man. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you again.
Cool. Thanks for having me, guys.
If you missed our conversation with Bono from U2 on the mm-hmm. Kevin and Bean Show earlier this morning, and I guess I should say if you missed the half of conversation right. that Brimug allowed us to have before he hung up the phone on Bono, you can go to krock.com. We do have a post up there on the website with an article about it, and also you can listen to the audio as well if you missed it.
Yeah.
We apologize again to Bono and all Irishmen for the way you were treated coming on the show today.
He got everything in. He got. He said all he needed to say.
Stop your
He
lying.
Said all you thought he needed to say, not all he thought he needed to say.
Right. He did not complete all of his thoughts and words.
No.
Thanks so much for getting up early. Thanks for calling in. We love you. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, dude. Okay. Bye-bye. Look.
It clearly wasn't done.
He said bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Clearly. But are you denying he said more words after bye-bye?
It sounded like
there's
love
bye-bye.
You or something.
And there's bye-bye. And
love you. Let's get together and let me come by and do traffic for you or something.
It could have been anything.
Anything.
Anything. Right. Fire beer mug.
Fire
probably.
Beer mug probably was going to be his last words.
Anything. So.
But the
Thanks,
point
dude.
Is.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Point is, let the man finish whatever
let
he was saying,
finish.
Whatever it was.
Sound like he was done, Ralph.
No, it didn't. You know how I know he wasn't done? Because he kept talking when you disconnected the phone.
But
that was my first clue that he was not yet done.
How many words is he going to say?
As many
say,
as he
however
wants.
However many as he wants.
He's Bono. You're
Let him talk.
There never has there been a bigger discrepancy in humanity than Bono in this hand and Beer Mug in the other.
How dare you? You don't get to decide what Bono says.
It's an evolved species versus protoplasm.
We got to keep it moving, guys. Anyway, hear the part of the interview that Mug's allowed at KROQ.com. Ralph is here now. Time for a final look at the showbiz beat. What's going on?
Now, listener Eric Estrada, not that Eric Estrada, tweets me. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at Ralph Garman. Hey, at Ralph Garman, go easy on at KROQ Beer Mug. It's not easy living with disabilities. How would you feel if a family member contracted mugatosis? He brings up an excellent point. I don't think of it that way. So
there is a cure for mugatosis.
Yeah, there is.
You don't want to know what it is, Hulk.
Fire Beer Mug.
Exactly.
Called Hire Somebody Else.
Fire Beer Mug.
A movie about the Penn State sex abuse scandals in the works. It's a horrible story, and it's a disturbing one, but I think there's a fascinating movie to be made about this.
I don't think I could go see a child abuse movie.
Well, I don't think they would probably depict that on the screen.
Yeah.
But the inner workings of big-time collegiate football, the politics of that phenomenon.
And the cover-ups.
A lot going on there. I think that it would be interesting to pull back the curtain on. Al Pacino attached to play head coach Joe Paterno.
Perfect casting.
Perfect casting. And John Carroll Lynch, who played Francis McDormand's husband in Fargo many years ago, will play Jerry Sandusky.
Hmm.
I think it's a great idea and great casting. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Les Moonves put the advertising industry on notice last week, saying that CBS television was more interested in a total view a show gets during any given week, thanks to streaming, video on demand, DVRs, and the such, than it is on its overnight ratings. Finally, someone is standing up and pulling the television industry into the 21st century, saying it's no longer how many eyes you get on the night it first airs. That's not a fair way to judge how many people are watching television.
Absolutely.
Yesterday, CBS said they're going to start using the Live Plus 7 numbers, which is the night a TV show would air, plus the 7 consecutive days after that. That's how they would judge the success or failure of a television program. So it's the 7-day C7 commercial numbers, they call them, which you would get the original overnight Nielsen rating plus all of the additional eyes of people seeing it on demand and DVRs and what have you. And that's how they will plan to sell their advertising from now on.
Well, that only makes sense. I mean, look, I'm your typical television viewer, and like a lot of people, I catch up on the weekends. It doesn't mean I don't love Sons of Anarchy or The Bridge. It's just that I usually watch them on the weekends when I've got the time.
There is as much as a 50% spike in ratings, especially in the 18 to 49 age group, when these numbers are factored in. Shows like, even successful shows like The Big Bang Theory, which already has a massive night of viewing, they get as many as 50% additional viewers when you factor in the next 7 days through these other avenues that you can watch television. Blacklist, the same experience, Modern Family. There's a ton of shows that would... Their numbers would be even more impressive if you factored in the next 7 days and how people view television now. So good for Les Moonves for demanding that the industry change with the times. Because it was ridiculous to focus on just on overnight ratings for Nielsen.
See, this is why we're not watching TV. People get obsessed.
That's right. Good work, Les Moonves. And bad work on this mom, Talina Evans, 25 years old, who's suing Barbie. She says Barbie's cursing at her 7-year-old. She's an idiot. She says she bought the talking Barbie for her daughter, but Barbie is yelling, "What the F," at her. "I'm not the only one who's heard it. You can hear it loud and clear," she said.
She tried to take the toy back to the store, but they wouldn't give her money back because she didn't have a receipt. Also, they told her she's an idiot. So they wouldn't give her money because stupid people shouldn't have money, they said.
Now,
they wouldn't, but they would if there was a store called Ralph's and you bought toys there.
We have seen stories in the past like this where somebody says they've heard something out of a children's toy that was inappropriate, right?
Right.
And it's usually interpretation. It's up to the listener to decide what it is they're hearing.
Mattel says this doll is programmed to say the phrase, off the hook, not what the F. I'll let you be the judge. Here's some actual audio from Talking Barbie.
F word, MF word,
what?
S word,
what the?
G word,
what?
D word,
what?
GD word.
What?
Get your sparkle on, space, off the hook. I love off the hook. Maybe I want to put you in a face off the hook.
Off the hook.
I hope your takeaway here is that your daughter doesn't get a talking Barbie doll because that's annoying as F.
That is annoying. Yes. I'm not saying it's not annoying. I'm just saying she's not cursing.
No, it's clearly off the hook.
Off the hook! Now, I'm getting my daughter, I don't want to tell, you know, I hope she's not listening, but for Christmas, I'm getting her a new doll from Mattel, Talking Cat's Mom. Yeah, it's going to be, I think it's going to be all the rage this year at Christmas.
And it's going to be beautiful.
I want to pick one up before the crowd start gathering at Toys R Us. Yeah, another story. Yeah, see, here's some of the sayings if Talking Cat's Mom says. Yeah, it's going to be a great Christmas gift. And lastly, Yilvis is back. Oh, Yilvis. I love the Yilvis. I wish their show was over here.
They're the Norwegians,
Norwegian
right?
comedy team, but they also do successful music, like last year's breakout hit, What Does the Fox Say? A bunch of their sketches and stuff from their show are available on YouTube. They do this great stuff where they've got a recurring bit where they have talking technology. Like, you get into an elevator, and it's got no buttons because it's supposedly a smart Vader where you just say the floor you want to go to. And then they do it live where they will voice in the actual responses from the computer and everything. That, you know, like, what floor would you like to go to? 7. Going to floor number 3. I mean, they will just F with people live while they do it. They've got an ATM one where they do. Very funny guys. But their music is probably what they're best known for here in the States. They've got a brand new song out this week called Trucker's Hitch. It is a country-esque sort of song. And the entire song is about their struggle to learn how to tie a knot called a trucker's hitch. They can tie all the other knots, but they can't do the trucker's hitch.
It's so hard. Greatest knot of all, so flexible and strong, but I do something wrong. I know the bowline cheek shank and the double overhand, but the trucker's hitch I just don't understand. Let's do the trucker's hitch.
Funny video. You can check it out on YouTube right now.
It's a pretty cool song, don't you think?
I do, Rodney. I think it's
kind of a
funny,
up-tempo, positive song.
It is. It's funny. It's silly because it's about tying a knot. So it's that's where the comedy comes from, Rodney. Maybe I can get my daughter the talking Rodney doll for Christmas.
There you go. That's what needs to be made.
Nope.
That would be awesome. Are you kidding me?
Not letting that doll near my 4-year-old daughter. Today's celebrity birthdays. Actor Fred Willard is 81 years old today. Actress Aisha Tyler. She's just adorable.
She sure is.
Jada Pinkett Smith is 43 years old. Jason Sudeikis, funny man, 39. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you so much, Ralph. I hope you and the listeners will come on back for another all-new Kevin and Bean show tomorrow. I think we've got a good one for you. With everything that's going on in the NFL, and in particular with the Minnesota Vikings this week, how about a guy who used to play for the Minnesota Vikings, Chris Cluey? He's going to be joining us in studio tomorrow.
Nice.
There's a guy who certainly knows the NFL from the inside, so it'll be fascinating to hear what his perspective is on all this bad news that's coming out of the league lately. Speaking of football this weekend, how about your Week 3 NFL picks? We'll check in with RJ Bell in Las Vegas again. TV Guide's Michael Schneider will be joining us in studio, too. You know, there's so many of these new shows that are debuting. It seems like every night, like last night they had the Fox show about the Children's Hospital. What's that called?
The Red Band Society. Yeah.
That was last night. And Scorpion's coming and a bunch of other new shows. He'll tell us what's worth checking out. Friday means we also got the movie beat for you as well. And I think that's it. And I think that's enough.
Me
so
too.
We'll see you tomorrow right here on K-Rock.